This doesn't bang as loud as it does back home. Yeah, I'd like to call this meeting to order, if I could please. I'm Vicki Walker. I'm State Senator from Eugene and Chair of this committee, the Education and Commerce Committee, Education and Workforce Committee. I have something else on my mind this morning. I will have each of our committee members just give a little introduction so you know who all they are. And let's start over here on my left with Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bill Morissette, I represent District 6, which includes Springfield and the rural area. Actually, it goes around through part of the University of Oregon and goes all the way to Sotaville, which is up near Brownsville and goes around several other large cities. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. I have been on the Education Committee since 1999, and this is an area that interests me greatly. My background is as a teacher. I taught for 30 years in the Springfield District, so I am vitally interested in the education area. Thank you.
I'm Senator Jeff Cruz, Senate District 1, which includes the majority of all of southern Douglas County, parts of Jackson and Josephine, all of Curry County, and about two-thirds of Coos County. This is my first term in the Senate after four terms in the House. In the House, my focuses were health care and natural resources. This is my first time on an education committee. I'm still involved in health care in the Senate, and I'm very glad to be on an education committee finally, and I expect this committee to do some good things. This is a very hot topic we're on today, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what the folks in what I refer to as God's country have to say on the issue.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Starr?
Senator Charles Starr, I represent Senate District 13, which is one of those new districts. I formerly represented Western Washington County, including Hillsborough, Canisius, and Forest Grove, North Plains, and Banks. But since the new district's formed, I represent Sherwood in southeast Washington County, Newburgh in Yamhill County, Wilsonville in Clackamas County, St. Paul and Kaiser in Marion County. I've served, this is my seventh session, and I've been on the Education Committee, both House and Senate, from the beginning. I've a licensed educator, no longer active. My license was issued in Idaho in 1955. Taught vocational agriculture. My oldest son followed Dad and taught VOAG at Sutherland, his first job out of the Oregon State University. I've been involved in education since a wee child, and I am very concerned that we let every child succeed to their potential. It's good to be here again in this community, and thank you for hosting us.
Representative Hannon.
Well, good morning, and first of all, thank you to the good senator for inviting those of us who are from our hometown. I'm a state representative for House District 7, representing vast portions of northeast Douglas County and southeastern Lane County. And my committee assignments in Salem are all in the Ways and Means process, so I have been buried in the basement looking at public safety and human services budgets, so it's nice to be here and get caught up to speed with some education issues, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Thank you, as do I. Again, I represent Eugene and Junction City area, Senate District 7. I'm a graduate of Reedsport High School, however, so I'm a Coastie and understand the issues in this part of the state, and have not served on the Education Committee prior to my service here. I'm a court reporter, have been one for 21 years, so legal issues, consumer issues, business issues have been sort of my angle for a while, and it's a great opportunity, like Senator Cruz, to serve on an education committee. And I want to thank our hosts today, Dr. Jonathan Hill and the Douglas County CSD have done a tremendous job of making us feel at home here. And I also want to take a moment to recognize some elected officials and have them come up and just give us just a few moments of their time. But before we do that, I would like to take a moment of silence to honor Marine Corporal James Lee Moore, who graduated from Roseburg High School in 1999. As many of you know who live here, Corporal Moore was 24 years old, and he was among 30 soldiers who died on January 26th of this year when their military transport helicopter crashed in western Iraq. He was the 34th person with Oregon ties to die in the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, and I know this community honored his memory and his family tremendously, and I would just like all of us to take a moment and do the same. Thank you. Thank you very much. I know all of us appreciate the men and women who serve our country. With that, I don't know who all the elected officials are from this community who are here. If you would just step forward and come up to the table and say hello, and anything that comes to your mind, I'll give you a few minutes to do that.
Two county commissioners. Marilyn Kittleman and Dan Van Slyke.
And I think, Marilyn, you are brand new, aren't you?
I am.
I read about you in the newspaper.
I bet you won't be done reading about me for a while.
Well, I could probably say that about myself. So. Oh, welcome. Thank you very much. You want to identify yourself for me?
My name is Dan Van Slyke, and I'm county commissioner for Douglas County.
Marilyn Kittleman, county commissioner for Douglas County.
I just only had a couple of brief things I wanted to share with the group, and I really I do appreciate you taking the time to come down and hear from the folks, because we really do try hard in Douglas County to make a point of listening to our constituents and really try to get an understanding as to what they really want to achieve with our services. But what I wanted to share today is we can't overemphasize the need to try to keep local control on services. And so what we have currently in existence would be our pick. You know, the service district as it exists seems to be working really well for us. But if it really was felt that it was important that there be a consolidation that would be put into place, I just wanted to briefly address sort of the issues of philosophical with other counties. We work very tightly with Coos and Curry on a variety of issues. I sit on a board, which is the Coos Curry Douglas Development Board, and what that is, that's a board that deals with economic development issues. And so I work very tightly with commissioners from those individual counties. And what we found over the last couple of years, not only on that board and that tight relationship that we have, but through the Association of Oregon Counties, we also have an established district that involves us working with that group. And we found that what our issues are, rural issues, are very similar to one another, and we work very well together, and there's a real cohesiveness. And when you go to their area, the problems they have are our problems, and the solutions are our solutions. Unfortunately, we don't have that same dynamic with Lane County. There's just a whole different philosophical approach to not only problems but solutions. And so I guess the one thing I wanted to share today briefly, it was to encourage that if there was a consolidation effort that needed to be brought forward, I would really encourage, at least in our area, that consolidation effort be encompassed with Coos, Curry, and Douglas as that unit, because you know, we do look at issues the same way, but more importantly, we do look at solutions from the same perspective. So, Marilyn
Kittleman. I also wanted to thank you for coming down, and I just believe public input is so vitally important. And unfortunately, I've been up and testified, and oftentimes you guys only hear from us when there's really a problem. You don't hear when things are going well, and oftentimes people just can't get out of work or out of town to be able to go up and testify. And so the squeaky wheel gets grease, but we need you guys sometimes to come down here and actually hear from us down here. And so we really appreciate that. And I also personally applaud the efforts to try to cut out any redundancy or duplication or anything like that. I understand where the feeling is coming from, but I will also stress and just kind of reiterate some things that Commissioner Van Slyke said, which is, if this is to go forward, we feel like it's running pretty well down here and would like to see it continue. But if that doesn't happen, we do have a lot more ties with the coastal area and with Reedsport. We're over there. We deal with them on many different boards. We have a lot of the same similarities. We do not have the same relationship with Lane, and so it would be very beneficial to us if that happens to make that a different kind of tie. But I do applaud your efforts for coming down and really appreciate you including us.
Do you have any specific questions for us that we could help at this time?
No, I just wanted you to talk about whatever was on your mind as an elected county commissioner in this district, and I think what you shared with us is what we probably wanted to hear.
Okay. Thank you very much for the time.
I appreciate your service as well.
Okay.
Thank you very much. All right. So how we work this, if you're not familiar with our system, is we have a sign-up sheet on the side table over there. So if you wanted to testify, you'll need to sign up. We have a little bit of prepared testimony that will come that's already invited. If you are under a time constraint, send a note up to my committee administrator, Marjorie Taylor. And I also want to recognize Don Tuso, our committee assistant. But send a note up, and we'll try to get you on right away. So I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 415 so we can get started. And first up, we're going to invite our host to come up and speak for no more than 15 minutes, Dr. Hill. So you could
that will be a challenge for him.
We're going to keep on a time schedule.
These people will believe you know too much about me already. My name is Jonathan Hill. I'm superintendent of the Douglas Education Service District, 1871 Northeast Stephen Streets, Roseburg, Oregon. I would like to welcome you to our facility, point out that this is a genuine 1945 Safeway building. It has been purchased by the ESD in April of 1987 for $206,084.86. It is paid for in full, and it is now valued at something over $1 million. So when you hear about the palatial digs that some of my colleagues may have, know that some of us have more humble environment in which to work. There, in fact, are limits to what we do, but we feel we've been pretty frugal about how we've done it here, and I do want to make sure that's widely known.
And that is very much appreciated to hear, Dr. Hill. Thank you.
I have been in this role since July of 2003. Before coming here, I was superintendent for Lake County Education Service District for 11 and a half years. Prior to that, I spent 4.5 years managing special education programs in a county schools office in California, which is more or less comparable. That office served 286,000 students in 33 school districts, and it was larger geographically than 5 states combined. It might be interesting to note that my specialist degree centers on organization and management of rural schools and districts, and my doctorate focuses on economics with a dissertation examining spending based on 7 different indicators of district size. Over the last several months, I've worked with my colleagues to craft recommendations for legislative consideration. Today, I would like first to give you 5 reasons to carefully consider our proposal. Then I will discuss some detail of our recommended criteria for restructuring. And finally, I'll make suggestions for how the committee might proceed. The OASD recommendations deserve careful study by the legislators for these reasons. First, the OASD recommendations address issues raised by school districts during the hearings conducted by the Interim House Education Committee. We had folks in those rooms. We listened very carefully. We have analyzed those comments, and as we have considered how we might structure a proposal, we took them very carefully under consideration, and we believe we have thoughtfully addressed all of them. The second major reason that our proposal deserves your attention is it does, in fact, create a system of education service districts that meets the needs of the state. We've done so very cautiously. We recognize that the strength of the ESD is the fact that it is driven by its component districts, but we recognize the need of the state to have a systematic service delivery system. And so we have, through compromise and a lot of hard discussion, are coming forward with a proposal that we think will provide that system without sacrificing that local decision-making and local energy. We would suggest the third reason is that regional planning will cause system-wide restructuring. In turn, efficiencies will be created that maximize resources. There's been broad discussion about money in schools and how can we spend it more efficiently. And I would argue that we have gone as far down the road as we can go individually, district by district. The time has come for us to take a new look to stretch the insufficient dollars further. We're not going to be able to do it separately. We need to do it collaboratively. And that this regional planning system is, in our view, an area, a way of taking the strengths of ESDs one more step and causing a restructuring that's vital. I do not believe we can expect the same system to continue to go forward with ever tighter money and be successful. Fourth reason to consider this proposal is that it does honor and it is driven by the needs of individual districts. It allows districts to continue to drive the system. And then the fifth thing that's important, and this was not an easy thing. When we met as a group, we worked carefully to think about the future of ESDs. And this is not easy. I'm sure you see this all the time. It's real easy to talk about what they used to do. It's real easy to talk about what they do now that we like. But what we talked about was not only those things, but we talked about the effects of No Child Left Behind as it unfolds. We talked about the new special education federal law and how that will unfold. And we looked at population statistics and looked at how Oregon is going to be changing in the future. And when we crafted our ideas, those were all factors in our decision making, so we weren't just focused on the status quo. Our argument is the status quo is not going to survive. We're going to have to do business differently. So what we tried to do was to craft that future and an ESD that would fit into it. So if I can draw your attention, I'll just walk you quickly through the recommendation, which is this document. We began by deciding what are the core services that have to be addressed. These are not terribly different from what's on the books today. That is what we do. It is not uniform across the state. And we said, so what are the pieces, what are the strands in this new future ESD that need to be? So we crafted those four broad areas that ESDs need to be active in. We then talked about, so how do you have to structure the ESD? What are the roles to it? And I would draw your attention on the third page. We talked about the accountability piece. How do we make sure that what we do is accountable? And then we talked about the implementation and creation of what I refer to as the master plan. The notion of this proposal is that there will be fixed an agenda that every ESD will address. Those core services, every ESD in Oregon will look at those core services, and as the districts and the ESD meet together, they will say, how are we going to respond to each one of those core services? The distinction between the status quo and what we're saying is that the list will include all the questions. In the current environment, which is entirely ground up, it is entirely possible for us to ask and answer the questions we want to ask and answer, but it's also possible for us to ignore or to not respond to those areas that are difficult or politically unpopular or a challenge to ask. That's the essential difference, is there's a fixed agenda, and you have to ask and answer all the questions, not just the ones you want to. You have to ask and answer the tough questions. How are we going to do it here? Our plan does not mean that every ESD is going to provide every service. Our plan means that we're going to have a strategy for getting an answer in each area, but it may be that we use contracting or the variety of options we already have to do the work, but the difference is we just have to ask and answer about each of them. And we will go down the fixed list of issues, decide how it is our ESD is going to deal with it, and a joint agreement with districts and ESD, this is how we're going to deal with it. And when we're done, my word is, you'll have a master plan of how you will assure that there's communication, technical support, the kinds of things that districts need to be sure they're being successful. And that's the essence of what we're suggesting. Yes, please.
I just want to make sure that I'm clear about what you're saying. What I sense you're saying is that you want to offer a menu approach. And so you decide on what the menu is, and then the local districts and the local ESD work together and decide from that menu, what are you going to provide and how are you going to provide it? Is that how I understand this?
We're going to we're going to look at those things and decide how it is. I'm nervous about the word menu because it means a couple of other things in ESD talk. And
okay. So let's be clear.
So you may want I refer to it not as a menu but an agenda. So you have to address every item on the agenda. Mm-hmm. And the answer might. Let me give you an example. In Douglas County, one of the questions that you probably have to ask and answer is how are we going to serve children who are have English as their second language, English language learners. How are we going to do that? Well, in Roseburg, in Douglas County, Roseburg has a full-blown program. They have a number of kids, and they have a full-blown program. We're not interested in the ESD duplicating that. It very well may be that as the Douglas County group were to ask to deal with that question, they would say, let's take the Roseburg program and see if there's a way we can reach out into the smaller districts as needed when there's a kid. But let's not have a full-blown program in Roseburg and a full-blown program at ESD. That doesn't make sense. So we have to answer the question about English language learners, but whether it's an ESD service that we do, whether it's something we contract through a district, if we deal with an outside vendor, we do what makes sense depending on how that problem plays out in Douglas County. And so it's ground up in terms of the solution, but it's top down in terms of saying you can't just ignore the problem. You got to deal with the tough problems.
Well, let me ask a follow-up then. How is that going to be any different than the way it is now? Because the larger districts currently provide a lot of the core services that you're talking about on your agenda, and they get back cash and service credits. It's kind of a weird little system. So tell me how it's different.
Well, it's first of all, what you've described is true in some ESDs, but it is not a universal way of doing business.
I see.
There's some differences. At this ESD, this is the way we do it. We have sat down and determined a list of services ESD is going to do. Now, the first difference between that and our proposal is that we determined the list, the agenda, as opposed to a fixed agenda. But we determined an agenda, we determined a list of services, and then what the districts determine is which of those are what we call universal services that go everywhere. And in this district, we have about a $4.5 million budget. Approximately $3 million goes to services that go everywhere in this county. Classic example is speech therapy. If you've got a kid who has a speech need, wherever he is or she is, it's the ESD speech therapist that's working with that kid. And if there's a big need that suddenly pops up in Glendale, we shuffle the deck and get that covered. And if that kid moves from Glendale to Winston, then we shuffle the deck and move to wherever that is. So in this ESD, we've agreed, the laundry list we worked on together, we generated our own, those services, $3 million worth, are universal. They go wherever, and they meet whatever the need is. And then there's another $1.5 million worth of services, and this is where we use the menu word, that are on a menu, and people pick which of those they want. So one district may want to use our printing service, but another district might want to use a different service, a counseling service, and they can pick and choose the pieces they want out of that second half. So that's how we do it, somewhat different from the system you described, but it does have that menu to it. Our districts do not feel they have the luxury to duplicate our services. I don't believe there's any district that has an ESD service that we're providing that they're duplicating. Now, on that menu selection, that may be true. More often for us, the menu service, the districts decide, we don't want to do it that way. We want to do it a different way. So that's why it's on the menu side of things. If they're not doing it, it's because they don't want to do it. They want to do something else. So we don't, to my knowledge, have that duplication problem that was reported to you in your hearing on Monday.
Okay. All right. Senator Starr has a question for you.
Thank you, Dr. Hill. Got a chance to look at some of your activities here as you gave us a little tour. And I see on this list the technology support to school districts. My question goes to the future of education and what we envision as far as opportunities for training teachers or delivering education on the Internet. How do you see that playing out?
That's an area that we're looking at very closely how to develop. We have in place today, through one of our grant-funded programs, a person who's using Internet technologies to do teacher training. Initially, it was all over Oregon. Now she's doing training across the country online through network classes and those kinds of strategies. And what we've been talking about internally and are moving towards is how do we take the expertise we have in some other areas, such as speech therapy, for example, and create teacher training where we take the talent of our speech therapists and use that distance learning strategy to put teacher training on available outside of our region. So we think that's an important role that we can develop. We've been looking at the technical aspects of how to do it and how to market, how to get the word out. But we're already doing that under one of our grant programs today.
Thank you very much.
Senator Cruz?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Hill, and we had this conversation earlier, kind of. I hope you didn't come away with the idea that I was opposed to change. I'm just opposed to inappropriate change. Here's some of the concerns I have with what you just laid on the table. Number one, the creation of the list, I'm assuming by the Department of Education through administrative rule. My comfort with the administrative rule process is not very great, which I told you, because it sometimes can turn south or in on itself. Although the list is not a bad idea, I'm just, I would be concerned about how that looked and what sort. I think we would need to somehow put a higher level of accountability back to the legislature on the creation of that list than normally would happen through rule. But the other problem I see with this, and this would be an overtime problem, is that because now we have the state setting a standard, and whereas now ESDs respond primarily to the districts they serve, I see over time the potential of that shifting and the ESDs responding to the state first rather than the district. So these are some of the concerns I have that somehow need to be addressed, and somehow we need to make sure we can put some safeguards in this to make sure that the dynamic that currently exists, especially in this part of the state, isn't reversed just because we're trying to do something to make sure we address all issues that should be addressed.
Madam Chair, Senator Cruz, I share your concern. The fundamental thing that we have to guard against that is that, first of all, the services we provide need to be approved by two-thirds of the districts representing a majority of the students. So that's one fairly major check on that. A second major check is that a majority of the people sitting on the ESD's budget committee are board members from local districts. So I share with you the concern. I don't know how you put the brakes on, but I also understand and appreciate the state's concern that without creating, in my view, the thinnest possible system, statewide system to it, some important things that do in fact need to get done don't happen. So that's really the crucial point in my head, is how do you find that very, very thin point where you in fact do create enough of a system that it's a little bit more reliable than the current system allows.
Yeah. Just a follow-up, Madam Chair, which we also talked about. I mean, interesting concept, but, we need to get this in bill form so we can address some of these issues, because until we get it into legislative language, we can't really talk about safeguards or sidewalls and stuff like that. So.
And Chair Walker, Senator Cruz, certainly if I can assist in that process anyway, I volunteer to do that.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Morsett.
Thank you. I appreciate some of the words mentioned earlier about consolidation, and on one map that I looked at had Lane ESD serving all the way down to Brookings, which is unacceptable. In looking at your handout, there are a couple of interesting points. On the last page, the assumptions, east of the Cascades, 10,000 people west, 30,000 ADMW served. Now that's a good. And then down at the bottom you have an asterisk saying where irresolvable conflicts occur, criteria may be adjusted. Okay, the two things that I see that need to be done throughout the state is each ESD must list the services they are currently providing, because they will vary. To me, that is critical. Secondly, distance is also a major, major factor, because if you have consolidation, does that mean you will close particular sites, which means you would have to travel longer distances? And if you keep them open, is there really going to be a savings? But the distance thing, I think, is critical for consideration. But I'd like to see a list from each ESD in the state talking about services. And then when you do consolidation, you make absolutely certain that those critical services are not discontinued because of distance. So, and I like the asterisk, which says
yes.
It's flexible.
Chair Walker, Senator Morissette, thank you for taking us to that page. I really would like to take as much, at least a few seconds to go over this, because this was really one of the toughest discussions I've had in 13 years of this business, but I think it's some of the best information that's been generated. It was an intense discussion to get us here. Looking at the criteria, bullet one, geography, is essentially what Commissioner Van Slyke was talking about. That if we start pushing people together, we need to make sure we're staying with a community, with folks who work comfortably and well together. And without criticizing anybody, I think we all admit there could be mismatches in that system. Under minimum and maximum number of districts, we debated that some, but in terms of the planning process and how you come together and create the master plan, 7 gives you enough districts that you really have something to work with. Get more than 20, and it gets a little nerve-wracking. A little questionable you could do that. Coos Curry Douglas, if they were to combine, would be 23 districts, so that's one of those places that asterisk clips in and says, so is that a good deal? So, but we debated that, and basically we're talking about the richness districts bring in, and the same with the second one, the 3,000 students. When a school district has 3,000 students or more, they begin to have some good district infrastructure. So when you're building your regional plan, just as I cited before an example of how we might rely on Roseburg, when you have a school district more than 3,000, they have enough critical mass of their own. They become a player in this. You get a couple of those players, and your planning process and your ability to efficiently distribute services becomes much easier. I mean, it gives you additional tools to use. Staffing model to, regarding core services, we need to keep in mind the balance between money, staff, and obligations. Minimum and maximum number of students. Here's how we agonized through that. We got to, currently on the books, it talks about 10,000 ADM. We looked at the core services that were on our list here and began to discuss, so what would it take to do that? This ESD is building a budget next year. This ESD attempts to do that core service package pretty well. And we have a budget, we're building a budget next year at $4.9 million. So looking at 18,000 students and $14.9 million, and I see us losing ground slowly but steadily in the area of technology. I see us really pinched in being able to keep our staff as well trained and current as they need to be. And I see us just beginning in a few cases to really offer some flexible service delivery models. We have places where our small districts huddle together and come up with a solution for themselves. And we have some things where the north end or the south end of the county huddle together and come up with some plans. To me, that's where you make that's where you reach the efficiencies, and that's where you really make sure you're doing the quality service. And so the 30,000, as we did the math, seemed like the best. And now, sitting in the room are 12 ESDs, superintendents and board members, east side, west side, small, medium, and large, good mix of folks, and the consensus was 30,000 funded today at $290 per weighted student. That's an $8.7 million budget, and we began to look at that budget and said, where's the breaking point? And so that's how we got to that 30,000 figure. But then we counted that there's 80,000 plus ADMW total in eastern Oregon. Two counties have 20,000 plus, and the other 20,000, the other 40,000 are scattered over 60,000 square miles. And so as we looked at this, we said, so what's doable? What's manageable given some of those dynamics? And that's how we kind of beat ourselves to the point to say, at $10,000, that's 10,000 students, that's a $2.9 million budget. And so we kind of tore that budget apart and looked at what we could do. and we came forward with that figure. Now, my own experience when I was in Lake County and the $1 million funding floor was agreed to, I testified before, during, and after that decision that in order to provide the, what I call the full meal deal in a place like Lake County was a $1.8 million price tag. And so it'd be $2 million plus today. So that was part of what I brought to the discussion as we talked about, so where's the minimum and what's it going to take that you have enough program that it's really substantive, and then you trade off the as you say, you're going to have satellite offices. Yeah, the cost savings isn't going to be the issue. I think the other way I'd look at it, though, particularly in the eastern Oregon settings, and I'll stop talking about them because I don't live there anymore, but one more shot, is that I'm not sure that when we put $5 million into five small ESDs and have them work in communities with no infrastructure, with districts with no infrastructure, and with that amount of money, that they can put together the best package compared to if we had $2 or $3 million in a lump, or maybe the $5 million in a lump dealing with more of them. I mean, I think we may have split the money up so tiny that it's not doing the good that needs to be done. So those are all discussions that need to happen. What we intended here was to get you the key points. As we watch this discussion unfold, everybody's running around the room waving a map in the air, and what we wanted to do here was to put some criterion on the table that we said, these are the things that you ought to be asking about. Nobody's probably going to hit them all, but we feel these are really the important, critical breaking points for you to look at in terms of saying, well, would, for example, the Lane, Douglas, Coos County, and whoever else, if you put them all together, well, you go down this list pretty quickly and say, well, that won't work. And we just wanted to give people a good tool to work with as they did this. And so that was the work that took place. And I, for one, think it's good work, and it talks about what makes the ESD work, and that's what's here. So with that, my recommendations is jettison the current language. It's going entirely the wrong way. It's pulling people apart, and being more efficient is all about bringing people together. And so the current Senate Bill 415 is not the way to go. I would encourage you to begin moving further with these. Senator Cruz's recommendation seems appropriate of getting this into language. I volunteer to do what I can to help. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Hill. I have two questions I'd like you to answer, and I'd actually, any of the other ESDs or superintendents who are here today could address this as well. First of all, committee, I need to let you know at your table here is a letter from Edward Jensen, the superintendent of the Wallawa ESD Region 18. He is the only one who voted no to accept the OAESD proposal that Dr. Hill is just explaining. So we'd like you to review that. My two questions for you, I was very much intrigued by the testimony of Craig Rossler at our hearing on the 7th, that was this Monday, the superintendent of the Silver Falls School District. He talked about two issues that are not addressed in this consolidation reorganization proposal you have here. One is the governance issue, how you are governed, mm-hmm. and the second one is a financial issue. And he sent that to me in an email, and I'm sorry, colleagues, I didn't print that out. Let me just state the governance issue is that he believes that ESD boards should be comprised of board members from the local K through 12 boards, and then on the budget committees, they should be superintendents from the K through 12 districts. So if you could comment about that. But the budget issue that I think is very interesting, and it actually goes to what Senator Ringo was complaining about, that ESDs get such a huge chunk. I mean, they get 5% of the state school fund, and then they keep back 10% for operating expenses and distribute the rest out, is my understanding. Well, apparently some of these ESDs have a lot of extra money laying around because they've been able to build opulent office buildings, buy airplanes, and do things like that. Now, I realize that's an anomaly, and it's not true with all of the ESDs. But Mr. Rossler, I don't know if he's a doctor or not, suggested that we change the budget structure from the 95.5% to a 98.2%. So I'd like you to address those two issues. Talk to me about governance and talk to me about changing the slice of the pie.
The way I view that, well, I think if you reduce, I believe I could fill the room pretty quickly with medium and small-sized districts who would be very seriously hurt if you were to change the formula, particularly at this stage, the balance, the 95-5 balance. Here's the way I would characterize it. If you have $100, you send $95. $95 to local districts to spend according to their individual district needs, and you send out $5 to groups of them called ESDs and say, spend this together and find some efficiencies. And I think that that's a very credible mix in terms of 95-5. The system is designed, keep in mind that the program is approved by two-thirds of the districts representing a majority of the students. That means the system is designed to assure equity, and it's especially assumed to support the medium and small-sized districts. If it tips the scale at all, it tips it that way. So if you take money out of that system, that would probably be perceived at least as beneficial to the larger districts, but the three-fourths of the districts that are small in this state would be seriously hurt by that change. I think the issue has, I would rather see, recommend you stay with the 95-5 split, but that you, I mean, the beauty of our approach, I believe, is that you force it more, you tighten the need to make sure that people are involved. I believe that some of the issues and complaints about ESDs that have been raised through the House hearings and so on come from the old days when ESD tended to be viewed a little bit more like a sugar daddy. I mean, there was money and they operated, and they would come to the districts and say, here's the plan, sign here and I'll deliver these services. And over the last several years, and the 95-5 split and the 90-10 split have been important. Districts have been more and more involved in the planning process. And what we're suggesting here, nothing gets spent until everybody's agreed to the plan. And I would suggest that those people who are trying to pull money out of the ESD if you dig a little deeper, I see those all as strategies for people who are frustrated because they have not been involved in the decision-making at the front end. They feel disconnected or disenfranchised. The important decisions are made, and then it's brought to them. What our proposal does is put that planning right at the front end so that doesn't happen. And that's why I think it's a solution to those folks who want to, whether it's pulling out big districts or whatever it is, opting out in any form, I think that means we don't feel like we've had a full voice. If they're put at the front end and they have a full voice, I don't think you're likely to hear what you heard on Monday of saying you're doing stuff I don't want you to do. You were at the table when we invented it. So if you don't like it, it's not our fault. You need to be there when those decisions are made, and that's a fundamental difference. So I would discourage you from fooling with that for the two reasons. One is I think our solution is better. I think our solution will deal with the notion of disenfranchisement. I think it will bring about a better spending and tougher decisions about finding those efficiencies. With reference to the 90-10, I see that somewhat differently. The 90% is obligated under the resolutions. The 10% does not necessarily go for operations. The 10% is just not required to go under resolutions. In this office, first of all, we budget at 92%, and second of all, we don't charge the districts for the overhead that goes with those programs, so that's paid for out of the 10%. The proceeds that we have from other income sources are sufficient. That our budget right now, our services out to district are over 100 right now this year, and part of this is quirky because of ballot measure 30. At this year, we're at 102% of our money is going out to districts. So the 10% shouldn't be thought of as that's just free money to the ESD to spend any way they want. That's still on the table. That's still discussed. And in those budget processes, it's very clear, at least the Douglas ESD, where that money came from and where it's going. And it's not going out the window, and it's not going to extraneous things. Day in and day out.
Well, that's probably, I mean, that's laudable in your district. Apparently, you have a really good relationship, but that's not what's been happening in some of the others. There's been no accountability about that 10%. Some see it as free money to do with what they want to spend on all this administrative support, and the money's not going back into the classroom. And that's what everyone cares.
Okay. Well, and I think we can. Then I think there are solutions to that.
And I think we might be able to adjust play with that in the governance part.
So. Yeah. The reference with your governance question, I guess what I challenge you with is the fact that we are currently governed by locally elected board members and a locally elected governing board. These people are giving free time, their own time to do this work. If you expect them then to take on another set of meetings and another set, another responsibility, that's a tough duty. We at the Douglas ESD currently have one of our board members who's currently a sitting board member. We often take graduates of the K-12 school boards into the ESD, but I would be concerned about a system that expected people to sign on to be the school board member in Glide and then also wind up with a seat on the ESD. I think you're just stretching volunteer help pretty far to do that. I think the fact that we're locally elected is good. The budget process, again, you may want to look at that in terms of, I don't know that but superintendents need or should not be. There is one ESD. I think High Desert has the superintendents on the budget committee. I don't think there's a problem with that. Again, if your budgeting process is transparent, you've solved the problem. And so there's other ways to solve it, I would say.
Transparency is a big issue. All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Hill. We've taken a half an hour with you. But I thought it was pretty much important because you were presenting the Oregon Association of ESD proposal. And I appreciate your time. And I'm going to need to take someone out of order. We've got a couple of folks who need to leave by 11 from the beautiful area of Bandon. So I have Kenny Kent and Jackie Cook. If you could come forward. You not only have a beautiful golf course, you have a beautiful coastline, a wonderful city. So welcome. And identify yourself and your affiliation, please.
Senator Walker and committee, my name is Kenny Kent. I'm from Bandon School District, 455 9th Street, Southwest, Bandon, 97411. And indeed, we have three beautiful golf courses and another half one on the way.
You know, a couple of years ago, I had a golf tournament at Bandon Dunes and Pacific Dunes, and it snowed both days, and it was in February. It was very unusual, but, and then the sky opened up, and it was beautiful. So that's the joy of the Oregon coast.
Senator Walker and committee, I too am a Reedsport graduate and lifelong resident and teacher from Reedsport, as was my wife, so we have something in common. The thing we had in common at Reedsport is in your day at Reedsport High School, they were a member of the South Coast Education Service District, and they did a pretty good job. The concerns that I share now as a superintendent of a district is a geographical location. I missed, as a teacher at Reedsport, I missed a lot of trainings and information meetings because I was 75 miles away from the source. There was a lot of times I couldn't effectively get a substitute for the day that I would have to take off to come over and attend a meeting. As a member of the South Coast ESD superintendent group, I can go to a meeting in a half a day and return, or in an hour and be back within a couple, 2 or 3 hours, and be back on the job, as can my staff when they attend trainings. Not all ESDs do the same thing, and Senator Cruz pointed that out. And those are some concerns that we have on the South Coast. If we were to merge with another ESD and we have this menu of items that the two-thirds of the majority would select from, we represent the minority on the South Coast. The two-thirds of the majority would be residing on the east side of the Coast Range, and we would probably have little or no say in what gets attended to. Therefore, I, as a superintendent of a small school district, would have to attend to the details of hiring a life skills person or a speech therapist or a OPTP person to affect those services that we currently get from the South Coast Education Service District. How am I going to do that? I'm going to have to hire somebody else to do that for me. Well, then all of a sudden your maintenance of or conservation of size or facilities have just gone out the window, because I'm only one school district out of the nine that would have to do this same thing. yes, we would probably collaborate with other school districts, smaller school districts, and hire one person to do that. But then comes the issue, what happens if that person gets pregnant, sick, leaves for 6 months or 3 months or whatever? Who do we get to replace that person? At the South Coast ESD, we have a way to take care of that. So I guess I'm completely against looking at typical standards of 30,000 schools of 10 or whatever. It doesn't work on the South Coast. You can imagine a Gold Beach superintendent loading up three or four teachers and driving for 4 hours or 3 hours to get to Roseburg for a meeting. It just doesn't work, folks. So I implore you to look at the economies that we've created on the South Coast and working with the South Coast ESD, where they spend approximately 93% of their dollars, and those dollars don't get turned over into fancy cars or airplanes. I know because I see their old buses driving by our schools pretty often. And the dollars get turned over to the following year and are used for education. They are the most efficient operation I've seen in my tenure as a superintendent. And I say that from the heart because I run a very efficient operation at Bandon. I'm a Scrooge. The South Coast ESD is more of a Scrooge. So I guess that's a plus. Maybe it's not Christmas. Thank you for your attention here, folks.
Thank you.
I'm Jackie Crook, and I live in Curry County. I live at Arch Rock Butte, 101 South Pistol River, Oregon. I'm a retired 40-year teacher. I've taught and was a head teacher in a two-room school. I was in an elementary. I was in middle school. And I, after 3 years of retirement, I taught at the Gold Beach High School. I have served continuously on a school board for 31 years. I'm currently in my second term on the South Coast ESD. I have been in two forced mergers. I'm not looking forward to being a third. Not one single merger that I've been associated with was about kids. It was supposedly about dollars. I have to tell you, there wasn't one single dollar saved by any merger that I've been associated with. What happens is that both cases we had more administration than less. As the dollars decreased in the South Coast ESD, we went from an assistant superintendent to only one superintendent. We have four people that are in our administration. They're responsible from anywhere from two to four programs. So if this is about money in our ESD, you're going to hire people. We have a technology person that is the finance person. She has two highly difficult jobs. We talked about the state of Oregon, and we're going to meet the state of Oregon's Office of Education's needs. I got to tell you, this is about kids, not about the state of Oregon's needs. Our ESD is extremely efficient. It has taken a number of years to get trust built in all of our districts, with our parents, with our boards, with our teachers. The further away you have your administration is the more disconnect and less responsive organization that you have. I 15 miles from Brookings, I traveled 155 miles here. When I go to a board meeting, I travel 200 miles round trip to go to a board meeting in Coos Bay. Now, when I signed on for that, I signed on and knew that I was going to have to travel the 200 miles, whether it was in a snowstorm that happened. didn't make any difference. I was committed. The board members that we've had travel 102 miles one way. If we're talking about being representative, how far I traveled 155 miles to get here. So if I chose to be on a board, I would have to either stay overnight, or I would, which would be another cost to the district, or I would have to get home in the middle of the night. And I think that's a little unreasonable. Larger districts become larger districts. If you think that you're going to just have one superintendent, because if let's just take Douglas County and Coos County, South Coast ESD, you're not going to just have one superintendent. You're going to have a deputy or assistant superintendent. We've seen that happen time and time again with mergers. If you're going to have a larger district, you're going to have a superintendent that wants a larger salary. It's not going to be the salary that is here necessarily at Douglas or at South Coast ESD. This is not about kids. And administrators don't teach kids. Teachers teach kids. The education of children are in the hands of teachers. You will have a huge morale issue. And we did when we merged Coos and Curry. Took years to build trust and to get purchase orders passed. We had teachers in the beginning that decided to go, and the purchase order was received after they came back. The less responsive issues of larger districts and the distance that we are. I realize that we have the Cascade Range, but I traveled where there's ice coming over the Coast Range. So if I'm going to come to a meeting, I have the same issues that people traveling across the Cascade Range may have. And lastly, I want to talk about resolution services. Kenny mentioned this too. There is no guarantees that we're going to be able to continue the same resolution services that we have. And as my husband told me to say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. We have this districts who have lost kid population, lost millions of dollars in the last 5, 6, 7 years because of the economics of Oregon. And so every district is at bare bones. Our districts have chosen the services that they desire to make their operation and the education to our kids efficient. And I am not familiar with, I'm just saying if we went with Douglas County, that we would have the same services to our district. So if we don't have life skills, then Kenny here has to add that cost to his budget. And that means that he may have a higher class load. And as you know, I'm sure you've heard what the classrooms look like today in the state of Oregon. If you have the 50% and two-thirds rule, there's no guarantee that the services that are currently in the South Coast ESD would be part of any service in the new district. And I'm very, very concerned about the education of kids, because you're on an education committee, and I hear that we've had educators. The classroom is a very important place. And we are diminishing the effectiveness of teachers every time we take arbitrary mergers that supposedly is supposed to save dollars, because, again, it never has ever saved a dollar in this state by merging any particular school district.
Madam Chair, may I?
Thank you. We have a court recorder in our midst, and if she were a stenographer and got it down word for word, that would be great. I would love to have a written copy of your testimony, because I think it raises a lot of the questions that I have concerns about, is that I think that consolidation is not necessarily going to save anything, and particularly providing critical services. I mean, it sounds good, but when you look at dual satellite sites, you look at more administrators, you look at some of the problems. But I think you've touched on the heart of what I think this whole thing is about for small districts. And if you could put that in writing and send it to us, I think that
would
be great.
I would be happy to do that. I just scribbled my notes.
Well,
you
no,
wouldn't
I,
want
but
my...
the ideas, and I wrote a lot of the ideas down, but I think you articulated them very well, and that would be something to have... useful to have in our file when we continue to discuss this, and that's why we're here, is to hear concerns like yours.
And I really appreciate you coming, even though it's better to come here than to go to Salem. Although I will be seeing you in Salem next week.
Well, we look forward to it. Thank you. Did any of the other committee members have a question? All right. Thank you, Mr. Kent, Ms. Cook. Appreciate your testimony. Okay. Let's see. Let's go back up the... Steve Boyarski, and let's see, you're from Southern Oregon ESD.
That's correct.
And Rick Howell from South Coast ESD. Why don't we have you both just come up at the same time?
You want me to go first?
Sure.
Okay.
And if you state your name and who you represent, that would be great.
My name is Steve Boyarski. I'm the superintendent at Southern Oregon ESD. Our headquarters is in Medford, but we serve Jackson, Josephine, and Klamath counties. Southern Oregon ESD serves 13 school districts in Jackson, Josephine, and Klamath County. We're almost 11,000 square miles. We're the largest ESD geographically in the state as they're currently configured. And we have about 51,000 students enrolled in those 13 school districts, which represents just a little less than 10% of the state population. So we're a relatively large ESD, both geographically as well as student count. Currently, we get our funding sources from a combination of our local property tax base and state income tax revenues, and the districts within our region receive 95% of the revenue from the school fund, and we receive about 5%. By statute, we have a 90-10 split. That's in statute, we return about 104% back to our districts. We're able to be pretty aggressive in grants and be able to serve them back with additional dollars as a result of some of the grants that we're able to procure. We engage in pretty rigorous resolution discussions in the fall with all of our districts for planning the upcoming year. We pass them by our board in January. They go to the district boards in February for their passage. Then we assemble a budget committee in May that's comprised of local school district boards as well as our own board, and then our budget then moves forward. Currently, we have three resolution services: special ed services, school improvement services, and technology and media services. That's one service. And I believe that there's sufficient checks and balances in that mix so that districts are getting the kinds of services they're asking for. I support the concept of ESD consolidation. However, I believe that the bill in front of us has too few a number. I think 8 is far too few given the geographic distances that we're dealing with. I've seen several different maps all the way from based on congressional districts to 12, and I'd like to show you a couple of those maps because I think visually it helps kind of illustrate some of the issues that we're dealing with.
I find this, Mr. Boyarski, I find this whole discussion of the maps kind of interesting because we have the same problem when we redraw congressional districts and legislative districts.
Yeah, can you imagine trying to get a consensus among our colleagues about what the congressional districts would look like? We'd have similar difficulties. So here's the first map. This is based on congressional districts. Do you want me to stay on the microphone?
Yeah. We can bring the microphone a little closer.
I don't know if we can see that. Probably be easier if maybe you just put those on and I'll stay here.
Oh, great.
So this is the first one. It's not, you can't read any of the county lines, but you can see what the second congressional district looks like. It's, if I've done my math correctly, it's about 70,000 square miles, and about 88 school districts are in the eastern, in that second congressional district. So obviously I think that's pretty unwieldy and pretty unmanageable. I personally am not in favor of five ESD districts. If you could put the next map on. That's the current map as it currently exists. I'm sorry. That one. This one is kind of roughly drawn in. You can see, I'm not proposing any of these. I'm just showing you how you might be able to visualize based on the criteria that of how ESDs ought to be reorganized. You can see this one, that there, if you take Klamath County out, which is the yellow one at the bottom, all the rest are east of the mountains, and you would have two ESDs. This is based on nine ESDs. You'd have two ESDs east of the mountains. These two ESDs, one would be 34,000 square miles. The other would be in excess of 26,000 square miles with 51 and 24 districts respectively. I think that's too large and too unwieldy. The ESDs, go ahead and put the last one up. The ESDs have a list of criteria, geography, which includes area, highway, topography as one of the criteria. District served, we recommended a maximum of 20 districts, although there's probably be situations and then that would have to be exceeded. A combination of component district size, a minimum number of students to generate enough dollars to be able to offer those core services, and at least one publicly supported institution of higher education. This is 11 ESDs, and it shows three ESDs east of the mountains. I'm not even sure 11 is enough. Perhaps it needs to be 12. Again, I'm just showing these as representative examples because three ESDs east of the mountains is still a large geographic area. And so 12 might be something that falls into some criteria a little bit more. I think that these ESD regions could work with the Department of Ed and component districts to deliver services to students in schools. Okay, thank you. I'd like to talk about one of the aspects of the bill, which is the large district removal from ESD regions. I'm opposed to that provision of removing large districts of 10,000 or more. In our region, that would mean Medford. They're a little above 11,000 students, so they would be withdrawn from our ESD region. They represent about 25% of the students that we serve. I've polled all of the 13 school districts that we represent and asked them where they feel about large districts withdrawal. All of them are opposed to it except Medford, which hasn't taken a position. They don't know what to make of it. So, but it's surely not something that they've proposed and put forward and advocated for. So I think it would negatively impact the services of those other remaining districts if that large district were removed and the districts, those 12 districts agree with me. I also think there could be some legal issues of removing a large school district from an ESD region. You would be taking our local property tax, our ESD identified property tax, and giving it to another taxing entity. For us, that would mean about $1.8 million of our local property tax that would be being given to another taxing entity. That would be like asking the legislature taking fire district money from one fire district and giving it to another fire district, and I think there's some legal issues involved in that. Another troubling element of the bill is the provision that requires the State Board of Ed to divide ESD liabilities and assets. We don't have any liabilities. We have two buildings, two 60-year-old buildings. One's an old grocery store called the Groceryteria, and the other was the old county poor farm. So we've hardly put our money into buildings. The asset redistribution would be pretty contentious. I'm not even sure the state board would like to be involved in those ugly battles. This requirement might mean that 25% of our media library, we have about 15,000 items in our media library, movies, videotapes, real kind of hands-on things, that it would require that 25% of that go to Medford. Medford then would have to set up a distribution system among their 17 buildings and a checkout system, which would parallel something that already exists. So I just don't think that asset piece makes any sense at all. Another component is it prevents ESDs from incurring bonded indebtedness. This is supposedly to prevent us from building palaces. I think this clause is bad policy. It would prohibit those locally elected boards from making those decisions about whether they should pay rent or whether they should buy a building, and I think that's micromanaging from the legislative point of view and is not good policy.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
A question specifically to that. I know some ESDs have done some of that to insure against the impact of PERS and a few things like that. So, you know, that would be removing sound physical management, I would think, if you can't do that.
I'm not sure what the question is. Could you rephrase it?
No, I was just citing an example, another example of the ability to handle debt or to bond for debt or future obligations as part of a management, as a good sound management tool, and to remove that from your ability, I think, would be really short-sighted.
I think he's agreeing with you. That's
yeah, thank you.
I was trying to help.
You were. I get it now.
Okay.
Quick
yes,
question,
Senator
please.
Do we have this in writing?
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Where is it?
I think she handed it out to you.
It was handed out, and I
have other copies.
I want to take this opportunity to say that Mr. Borarski is doing a very good job of testifying because he's not reading his testimony, but his testimony is here.
I'm trying to stay on track, however.
Well, I appreciate your delivery, so thank you.
Now, does this come with your...
No.
No, that's our next speaker.
Okay. I'm looking through the wrong one.
All right. If you could continue.
Yes, I have one kind of last area that I want to discuss, and that's a regional perspective. ESDs are the only educators in a region that have to have a regional perspective. It's part of our job description. So when we're planning any activity, we're thinking of how it's going to impact Klamath County, how it's going to impact Josephine County, how it's going to impact Pinehurst with 40 students. That's in no other job description of any education personnel in any district. Their primary obligation is to their local district. So they aren't forced to look at things on a regional basis to see if it makes sense regionally. ESDs provide that balance because we have to think in terms of how could services be delivered more efficiently, or how could they be delivered in a better way given the various size districts, irrespective of size or proximity. So that's, I think, a critical balance in this whole piece is that's in our job description to think regionally. It's not in the district's job description. They think about their own district, and rightfully so. But I think there's some balances there that ESD personnel are always thinking in terms of districts, irrespective of size or their geographic proximity. We have a statutory requirement that every year we explore one of the cost efficiencies, whether it's transportation or business services. I can tell you it's a non-starter as a conversation item with districts, because you're asking districts to give up some of their money to be able to consider some regional cost efficiencies. When it's their money, they don't want to give it up. We have those discussions, and it's over in 5 minutes. They say, you know, basically, it's next item. When the money is given to the ESD directly, then it forces those debates and those conversations about how to best use it in a cost-efficient way on a regional basis. If they hold the dollars, they're very reluctant, and in tight budget times, understandably so, reluctant to give them up. But you may end up with duplication of services because each of them is only looking out for their own individual district. Staffing teaching specialties is really a toughie, and I think is a critical area for ESDs and regional programs. Autism consultants, speech therapists, teachers of the deaf and blind, those positions are really hard to find people that are trained and licensed for. And if districts have to hire these people directly and they hire them based upon student population, so, we need 2 speech therapists this year, next year we only need 1, you're not going to be able to hold those trained people. And so as a region, we're able to hire them regionally and then move them around where the populations are. That's a real advantage for serving those students that are low incidence, high need students, is to have them hired with a regional entity so that they can be moved to where those students exist and served in their home districts. In summary, I'm supportive of the ESD consolidation and of ESDs assuming some field services with the Oregon Department of Education. I believe that Senate Bill 415 consolidates too drastically and would create regions, eight regions that are too large and too unwieldy. I support consolidation based upon criteria that OAESD has developed. I believe the result would be a statewide system of regional services that would work collaboratively in a state system to improve education and fulfill those state requirements. I'm supportive of the current decision-making model adopted by the state legislature just 4 years ago, in which with the 90-10 split and the 5% of money, that was just 4 years ago that those new requirements were added, and all of a sudden we're asking it to be changed. I think that there's some checks and balances in that, and it gives them control over those regional dollars and access to what those services should provide. I'm opposed to the provision regarding large school districts withdrawing from the SD. I think it's counter to the concept of regional programs. It doesn't utilize regional efficiencies. It creates inconsistencies and communications problems and services with ODE. I think it's probably illegal, and it doesn't solve the school funding crisis. I think Senate Bill 415 would weaken rather than strengthen the common purpose of education service districts and school districts, and that is to serve the educational needs of Oregon students. Thank you. I'd be glad to answer any questions that you have.
Senator Cruz.
How much direct cash does the Medford School District get from your ESD? Or do they get? I mean, the reason for the question is because you talk about large schools opting out, and we hear that in some ESDs that there's a fair amount that is just direct cash.
Actually, they overutilize their allocation, and we bill them back for services. We run some autism programs that they contract with us to provide.
So that would certainly be an example of a large school district that's fully utilizing the ESD services, wouldn't
yeah.
it? Thank you very much.
Yes.
Thank you very much for
Thank you.
And if you want to give us your name for the record, Mr. Howe, and who you represent.
I am Rick Howe, Superintendent of South Coast Education Service District at 1350 Teakwood, Coos Bay. And I probably won't be as good in my presentation because I'm going to read. I don't want to miss anything.
All right. Well, I don't have your testimony in front of me.
But you do have. We are having a workshop here.
All right. How long is your testimony?
It'll be. We will not go through that page by page, Senator.
All right. Thank you. We have a lot of people here to testify today, and we can read. If you want to hit Absolutely. The high points, that would be great.
Yeah, I just want to point out a few
items. Okay. There. Please take it away.
Okay. Senator Walker, members of the committee. South Coast ESD serves 10 school districts from Brookings at the California border to Reedsport in western Douglas County. We cover 3,277 square miles and a bit over 15,200 ADM-weighted students. We have a total budget of about $15,600, of which $4.21 million are from state school support funds, from which we receive about $284.47. Other dollars come from contracts, other school districts, and our component schools, and from grants and pay-for-use services. It also includes $1 million for the TAN pool, which is our borrowing pool in case we need to borrow, which we haven't had to, but you still want the option, and a $350,000 contingency. 90% of our state dollars are spent, not budgeted, but spent on resolution services that are decided by our component school districts. Those resolutions are services for children with multiple and or severe disabilities, with children with mild and moderate orthopedic disabilities, and next year for digital video streaming, which replaces our media center. I'm here to speak in opposition to Senate Bill 415 and to speak in partial support of the OAESD proposal. Arthur humorist Ashley Brilliant, and that is really his name, Brilliant. It would be nice to go around and say he had a brilliant name, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Wrote that my sources are unreliable, but their information is fascinating. Well, I expect that you'll find that my sources are indeed reliable, and my information I hope you'll find some fascination with. The major issues I'd like to talk about relating to Senate Bill 415 are the provisions that require schools that have more than 10,000 students to opt out of an ESD umbrella and that require consolidations of ESDs from 20 to 8. These two questions have been studied by committees for years. It's surprising that ESDs in this state aren't dead already because we've been studied nearly to death. The 1967 legislature commissioned the Intermediate Education District Commission to prepare a state plan for organizing IEDs, the Intermediate Education Districts. That's our predecessor. The report of that commission in 1968 recommended that there be 15 service agencies. One of them was to be called the Southwest IED, and that included Curry and Coos IED. And I actually found that study in our records. So we have archives. That number was based on the degree that an IED could provide a high degree of staff specialization, specialized facilities or equipment, and sufficient operating costs and enough students to provide economies of scale. Coos and Curry maintained the separate IEDs until Senate Bill 26, which is in your packet, and that passed in 1993. A copy of the bill there for your reference should be near the top. Another major report was completed in 1992, and this will be the next one in your packet. This one was completed by four K-12 school district superintendents, three education service district superintendents, and two state board of education members. You have a copy of the summary there, and it's titled Report on the Task Force on Education Service Districts. Page 4 of this summary includes the committee's recommendations at a glance. The first recommendation suggests that ESDs reduce from 29 to 15. The fourth recommendation calls for the inclusion of all school districts under the umbrella of an ESD. Now, page 14 of your summary gives the rationale for having 15 ESDs and the criteria. You'll see that criteria come up again. That criteria includes a student population of 10,000 students, ability to provide a variety of services, issues around geography, and having at least one publicly supported post-secondary institution included within each region. Page 16 includes the map. Region 6 of the map is the current configuration of South Coast ESD. Page 18, and I'm sorry I'm going fast, but page 18 includes the recommendation and rationale for including county units and large metropolitan school districts in education service districts. This is where it all happened. People, the rationale for including these districts within the ESD umbrella then is the same as it is now, to foster equal educational opportunity across school districts in their regions. In other words, in the way that we phrase it, a student empowers deserves the same level and the same quality of service as a student in Coos Bay right across the street. We believe in equity of service, not equity of dollars. That's what's best for kids. The recommendation in this bill showed up in legislation in Senate Bill 26. The idea then was to merge 29 school districts of 15, according to the map on page 16. The actual mergers after the changes left with 21 ESDs, not the 15 recommended. The last study I'll refer to was required by House Bill 2567 in 1999 and completed in May of 2000. You have a copy of the summary of this study in the Legislative Task Force on Education Service Districts. That should be the next one down in your packet. You'll note on page 2 that the study committee was chaired by the State Board of Education chair, and members included senators, representatives, K-12 superintendents, K-12 board members, ESD superintendents, and ESD board members. They took testimony from legislative revenue, from K-12 districts, ESDs, Oregon Department of Ed, and many others, including Robert Stevens, the leading research on education service agencies nationwide. They also went on the road from I-5 to Eastern Oregon for testimony. This is not a self-study of ESDs looking at themselves. Neither was the 1992 study and report, and neither was the 1968 study and report. This task force began with a basic question, and I remember this question because it made me nervous. Should regional service agencies even exist? And if so, how should they look, and who should be the regional service provider? The summary of the report is on page 4 of your packet, sheet. This study recommended ESDs as a regional service provider and that 21 ESDs be reduced to 14. There are other changes, including the one that led to our current funding formula. You might note on summary point number 11 on page 5 that Douglas and South Coast ESDs are still listed as separate entities. At no time in any study has it been suggested that these two agencies merge as one. Specific recommendations begin on page 11. The criteria for organizing ESDs is on page 19 and refers to the 1992 study. This criteria was again reviewed and again confirmed unanimously. Page 20 of the summary lists a student population base of 10,000, ability to provide an array of services, a sense of community, geography and proximity of a community college or other publicly supported post-secondary institution within the region. Now, again, using the guidelines, this study and recommendations from the task force, the subsequent legislation, which is in Senate Bill 259, and you have that in your packets, too, just for reference, maintain the autonomy of both Douglas and South Coast ESDs. The legislation that passed did not force mergers, but it did keep them optional and granted a $1 million floor for the smaller ESDs. There are currently 20 ESDs, so what's in common? These were not studies done by ESDs, but studies sanctioned by legislation and completed by a variety of parties. They also developed criteria has been similar. A student population base of 10,000, ability to support an array of services, boundaries that reflect geographical and cultural considerations, and a presence of a public community college or other higher education. Senate Bill 14 should not include I'm switching over here. This is my smooth transition, right?
Okay.
Senate Bill 415 also should not include the opt-out for large districts. That inhibits, as studies have noted, the ability for equity of service to all students in Oregon, regardless of where they live. Senate Bill 415 should not include cookie-cutter mergers that, under the maps that probably would be drawn, as it's currently written, and this is the first time, when Steve showed the map a while ago, the first time I'd seen it, but that probably is about what it would look like under some of these proposals, would have much larger ESD regions. If an ESD cannot provide an array of services, and that array is noted in the OAESD Task Force report, those core services, to include services in technology, school improvement, administrative services, and special education, then the ESD might not be a highly functioning ESD. Those services, however, can be provided through resolutions, through contracts, grants, partnerships, collaborations, consortiums, or other means. But if the districts want them, they certainly ought to be able to get them, and they should be able to get them from an ESD. Also, Senate Bill 415 should include more ESDs than currently recommended in the bill. The studies over the past 35 years have been pretty consistent in their criteria. Even criteria carried over have been reviewed. None of that criteria and none of those studies has ever recommended merger of the South Coast and Douglas ESDs. The Oregon Association of Education Service Districts in the committee meeting also came up with criteria for their consideration, and this was presented by Dr. Hill earlier. The general criteria of those recommendations is okay. It's good. It considers geography. It includes some cultural issues and a sense of community. It's good to have a concept of a number of districts served. That should be considered. Have a combination of districts so that you can have larger and smaller and medium-sized districts. They share different information. Be able to share an array of services. Have enough students to create scale and have at least one publicly supported post-secondary institution. It's when you get to the sub-points, the white bullets, that the recommendations need a critical eye. For example, is an ESD that serves 20 school districts really more effective than one that serves 13? Is bigger really better? Why are two districts with 3,000 students needed? Or in Eastern Oregon, why is even one needed? It's good to have a combination of large and small districts, but in Eastern Oregon, a small district might have 13 students, and a large one might have 1,000, and others would be somewhere in the middle. That combination of sizes is important in framing discussions and decisions and for sharing. South Coast ESD does have a district with 3,700 students in it, but we also have partnerships with our community college and our university center, and that creates scale for us, too. That creates resources for us. And besides, the criteria for 3,000 students has no basis in any of the previous studies, nor does the 30,000 number. Why the East-West divide on the number of students recommended with an ESD region? If 10,000 is a number for scale, then it's a number for scale. If 30,000 is a number for scale, then it's a number for scale. There are other issues for geography, but if you're just talking about what is a number for scale, past studies have stayed with the 10,000. I'm told that South Coast ESD is already the size of the state of Maine, which makes us the main ESD in the state of Oregon, I think.
Yeah, but we're bigger than Maryland.
But anyway, I don't know if bigger is better. The last couple of bits of food for thought around two questions. Why aren't there 15 or 14 ESDs now if past studies have consistently recommended those numbers? And my guess is that even though studies have made considered suggestions based on research, lots of testimony and best practices, there are other forces at play. Those include the underestimation, perhaps, or underemphasis some of the communities placed on the value ESDs have in their local communities. The geography and culture piece perhaps plays a larger role than folks suspected also. And how do we answer the statement from the football player in Jerry Maguire? Show me the money. Show me the quan. If this recommendation and push from the governor and others is intended to create efficiencies, then show me the inefficiencies. What ESDs are not delivering those core services that we've talked about? Where is the inefficiency in their delivery system? Maybe that's a place we can work, too. If it's about saving money, then show me the money. Show me the savings. What study can show, and I haven't seen any studies that show, significant gains and dollar savings through especially these massive consolidations? If there are big savings, and I'm not sure there are, let's move the discussion beyond hearsay and into some data that we can take a look at where the savings truly are. People, this should be about kids. Every kid in the state, no matter where he or she lives, deserves to have the same level and quality of service. And I don't see Senate Bill 415 creating that support for our kids. My component school districts and parents can best speak to our high standards as an ESD. I expect that can happen also in other ESD regions. You have in your packets a letter signed by all 10 South Coast school district superintendents. It would be the first letter of testimony that you have that says they're not interested in consolidating. They don't see the advantage. You heard superintendent already testify that, and there are more here. You might note the date on this letter is before the Senate bill was introduced. This is not a reaction letter. This was just something that they felt when they heard the rumors going around that they needed to address. You also have letters of testimony that I was asked to bring from folks who wanted to be here for personal testimony but had other reasons they could not attend. Those include a letter from Vicki Goodrich, who is a parent of a child in our program for children with severe and multiple disabilities. She is also on our South Coast board. You also have a letter from our accountant. And she came to us. She said, Rick, this is crazy. I read this in the paper. What's going on? And she wanted to testify but couldn't. You have a letter from the Coos County Commission on Children and Families, one of our partners. We often share concerns for the same children, and our partners are collaborators with many of the commission's members. You have a letter from the North Bend School District, Mike Struksma, who could not be here. Time permitting, you'll hear testimony from these other superintendents, board members, and a business manager, technology director from Brookings. South Coast ESD is a highly effective organization that adds value in benefits, support, and dollars to our district. We're not just middle management. We are direct support. I hope you'll find that my sources have been reliable and that the information you've received has been somewhat fascinating. And I thank you for your time and opportunity for my final word that Senate Bill 415 is not a good thing. It's not a matter of making the tough decisions. It's a matter of making the right decisions.
Madam Chair, may I?
Just a moment, Senator Morissette. Mr. Howell, you gave us wonderful letters from all kinds of people. You gave us wonderful testimony, but your written testimony is not in our packet, and I think that's what you are going to address, Senator Morissette. Could you get that to us?
Senator Walker, I'll bet that Dr. Hill would be glad to make copies of this, and you'll have them before you leave today.
That would be great. They, of course, won't be sprinkled with your humor, but we will remember that.
There'll be a slight charge, you said.
Yeah, right. It'd be an enterprise piece, I might have known.
Right. Senator Morissette,
yes, are you telling me that you do not want to be part of the Lane ESD? Is that what you're trying to say?
I would love to be a collaborator with Lane ESD where shared services make sense.
I think your testimony was wonderful, and I, too, would like a copy of it.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome, and your testimony was very good, Mr. Howe. What strikes me is all the, and I knew about all the task forces. Mr. Rose had laid those out for us on Monday, but you went into more detail and provided us with documentation that I can review and the committee can review. What struck me, though, is that we consistently, the review came down to let's consolidate to 14 or 15, and I was reviewing Senate Bill 215 from the 2001 session that you spoke about that came, I believe, came out of the task force report, 259. And it didn't force consolidation. It gave the option. And, of course, no one consolidated because for maybe the reasons that you talk about it, but also maybe because no one wants to give up their ship. So I appreciate that there's discussion on the table previously and documentation that says 15 or 14 would work, and we're going to look at that pretty closely.
Senator Walker, if I can kind of help you out a little bit here, there was a consolidation with the Yamhill to Willamette ESD.
Right, that was one.
And there's also another look at consolidation from Region 9. Their board spent about a year and a half with a board self-study. They were looking at the question was, could their kids get better service if they were consolidating with other ESDs? And they looked at several things. One is consolidating as a whole with another adjacent ESD, and the other was splitting districts up and some going to one ESD and some going to another. And when they finished their look at, what that board decided was the kids were not going to benefit from that type of consolidation.
All right. Thank you. Senator Cruz?
Well, thank you. And Rick, thank you. I had asked for all this historical data, and I appreciate it. And I do think it's credible, and especially the report of the task force from 1992, and I say that most primarily because my father was on the state board and on that task force, so I'm required by law to pay attention to it, I think. So, if I want to go home again, I guess, or something. But I look at the map and that, and it makes more sense to me than what's on the table now. So it's nice that we have other options that have been considered and been vetted, so when we do get down to decisions, we do have this historical perspective of other folks who have taken a hard look at the issue, and so I really appreciate getting this information.
I do, too. Any other questions?
Yes, Senator Walker, Senator Cruz, and that's what I was doing this for, so you could see that there is some science behind these suggestions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Howell. Thank you, Mr. Boyer.
You're welcome.
I appreciate your testimony. All right, colleagues, we've got about an hour because we have a field trip planned this afternoon, so we're going to take our lunches with us because I want to give the rest of the time here to folks. We have quite a few, so if you could sort of keep your testimony succinct so we can get everyone in. I'm going to bring you up three at a time. Ron Hitchcock with Lane ESD, Steve Bowman, and Marv Ott. And you may not even have the same thoughts or come from the same area, but come on up and we'll take you all. And Mr. Hitchcock, you've testified before, so you're going to be really brief, right?
You want it briefer than my other 3-minute testimony?
All right. So let's start with, let's go left to right.
Okay.
So you, sir, are whom?
I'm Marv Ott, and I'm superintendent at Port Orford Langlois School District in Curry County. And I don't have a high-powered presentation from the folks that you've already heard, but I think it's important that you understand and you know how any kind of consolidation would affect a small school district. Now, Port Orford Langlois School District is a small school district. We only have about 400 students in the district. And I want to address what Senator Morissette was talking about is geography, basically. I'd like to work more cooperatively with some of our other districts, but the nearest district is 25 miles away. It's not like a lot of other valley areas where you've got a dozen districts in 25 miles. So whenever I talk about going to the ESD for a superintendent meeting or a principal meeting or a curriculum meeting, I'm talking, 2 hours travel time, couple hours of meeting. I'm gone a half day. If there's any expectation that I were to go to Lane or even to Douglas here, I'm talking a full day. Now, I want to add I'm superintendent, but I'm also principal at three different schools.
Mm.
I have two elementary schools that are 13 miles apart and a high school that's directly in the center, and I'm principal at all three of those. And like today, I'm gone the whole day. And I want to also address another comments that have been made is that the students are not seeing a leader. The teachers do not have a leader when I am here. And if this were more of a regular situation, then they are going to suffer. Either I will not be there to do what I need to do in that role, or I miss out on the opportunities and the information that I need to have to be an effective superintendent. And so that's basically my statement, that this is directly related to small districts. And I know you'll hear that from Powers, and if Brookings and Gold Beach were here, it's geography. It's a long way. Now, I do want to add one other thing. The service that I receive from the South Coast Educational Service District allows me to survive as a superintendent personally and my district to survive. Now, for the cost of one confidential employee, I get business management, technology management, accounts payable, and payroll. I don't have those people in my district, but I am able to contract that service with the Educational Service District. And I have expertise that I could not have if I had those, tried to hire someone in my district, and it's at a cost savings. And so there's, if I lose that, if I have to deal with Roseburg or Eugene to get those services, it will be impossible for me financially to continue as we are. And I won't admit that we have too much administration at this point. So anyway, that's my statement, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Ott. You have certainly dispelled the myth that men cannot multitask.
I'm also a curriculum director.
You're also a curriculum director? Well, I'm very impressed. Thank you for your testimony.
This isn't about me. This is about students.
It is. Okay. Sir, you are.
I'm Steve Bowman, 87480 Bowman Lane in Bandon, Oregon, 97411. I'm a board member from South Coast ESD, and I have a slight handicap, so if I talk a little strange or you can't follow me, be sure and let me know, and I'll repeat. I know you don't want repeat business, so I've been a board member with ESD since 1984. Prior to that, I was on the Port Orford Langless School Board for 4 years prior to going on to ESD. I was a board member with Curry ESD when we went through the forced merger, and I was on the committee that helped put together the merger of those two districts. And I can tell you it wasn't all pleasant. There becomes a them and us atmosphere amongst the staffs, and it carries over for years. It affects the children that are in the districts. The antagonism continues on. We eventually ended up having to let a number of the staff completely go because they wouldn't let go of the antagonism of being taken over by another group of people. I'm a cranberry farmer, so I have a tendency as a farmer to say it as it is. It isn't all pleasant. Forced mergers are not what you may perceive. I don't disagree with mergers as per se. I think that if groups and organizations feel compatible and they wish to merge, I think it's a great situation. It's done on a friendly basis then. When legislation forces it, it becomes antagonistic. And it follows down to the teachers and the teaching and the students. And the students are affected by mergers. It isn't, they form relationships with their teachers, and sometimes the relationships with the students and the teachers is closer than with their own parents. The kids we deal with are very fragile. They have problems that most people don't have. And the relationships they have with those teachers are very critical in their process of being able to develop in life. Through mergers, we had the forced mergers that we had some teachers that were transferred or let go, and we had students because of that, that their development was interrupted, and that's a sad case. So I hope you would take that into consideration when you talk about forcing a number for whatever reason. If there is mergers, and if it's economically needed, then that should be shown to those districts that they're not going to make it without merging, and they should find a way to be compatible with one of their regions around them for merging. And me not being a superintendent, I'm going to cut it off at that.
Thank you, Mr. Bowman. I appreciate your testimony. Mr. Hitchcock, your turn.
Chair Walker and committee, thanks again. I'll make this even shorter than Steve Bowman, I hope, even though I am a superintendent. I am the superintendent, Lane ESD, and appreciate Senator Cruz being from God's country. I'd like to think that those of us who reside in Lane County live in the Garden of Eden. We're just a little bit north of you. And
ooh, I like that.
And the bottom line for me is to say that Lane County and Lane ESD is not broken. We do not need fixing, as the lady before me mentioned. And so rather than speaking to the concept of mergers, which presupposes that that's a done deal, I think there are some assertions that, left unchallenged, take on the resemblance of fact, and they're assertions, and they are, in fact, incorrect. And I can hopefully start by a couple of questions you pointed out from Superintendent Rossler about the governance structure. I think the current governance structure that we have, that I won't articulate because you've heard that before, is nothing short of brilliant. Not Mr. Brilliant that Rick Howe referred to, but I think it's a stroke of genius because there are so many layers of checks and balances. If you put school board members on our boards, you now have a definite conflict of interest. How can they advocate for every student and every family in a county when they were elected to represent the students within that district boundary? And that's the critical distinction between an ESD and every other of the 198 school districts, is we represent the best interest for every student and every family in our area without distinction. And whether they come in our area from Blatchley with 122 students or Eugene School District with 18,000, they get the same weight of our attention. That can't be done with the governance structure that was suggested, nor having superintendents on the budget committee. That leads to the same conflict of interest. The people that sit on our budget committee that outnumber our board members are, in fact, all elected board members who are already appointed by their superintendents. So, assuming that the superintendents and their board members are on the same page, they do that. Having said that, back up one step more, functionally, the superintendent councils drive that list. And Senator Morris said, already said, I think it's critical that we have a list. We have a list. We have lists upon lists. And what's on that list and what's not on that list is a direct function of what the superintendents recommend, and then the budget committee funds, and then the boards approve. So I think that, in a nutshell, hopefully, is the answer to the governance. The 10%, I'm sick and tired of hearing people make an assertion that that somehow funds palatial buildings or buys airplanes or that it's ill-used. Because if somebody wants to challenge the way that we use our administrative apportionment, then I've got numbers all over the place that say we will spend this year 3.5 times what we get through the state school funding formula. And we're not alone in those kind of numbers. If somebody wants to challenge the way that you do the 10%, then I would ask, were he here, Mr. Rossler, to say, do you get any share of the $36 million other dollars that flow through your ESD through contracts through the Department of Education? Or in Douglas County, part of the $45 million that flow through them for contracts, or in my county, $16 million. Nobody talks about that additive value that's above and beyond the 90% or the 10% or the 5% or the 95%. So if we're going to micromanage, if we're going to really be scrutinizing a few dollars, let's look at the full picture of what full-service ESDs provide, because just as I said about our ESD, I don't think the OAESD or the ESD structure is broken. The previous superintendents that you heard are my colleagues in what we call Zone B. So you've heard a mouthful from Zone B superintendents about this. And I don't think that any of them or any of our colleagues would back away from that statement either. So I guess what I would be saying is, if there's a problem with an ESD, either east or west or wherever it is, go through the process that's already there. A disenfranchised board member or a disenfranchised superintendent is still in the vast minority because we did a survey. And the resolutions across the state of Oregon that have to be approved by that two-third majority were virtually unanimous in every single of the 20 ESDs. There are no boards dissenting. There may be a board member dissenting. There are no superintendent groups dissenting. There may be a superintendent dissenting. That's the dynamics of our governance structure. So I'll wrap it up by saying districts opting out or using their cash, that's available now. That doesn't need another layer of governance. Districts merging or being forced to consolidate, that's a mechanism that statutorily exists either through the OBE or through the voluntary merger of adjacent folks. That doesn't need to be legislated again. The duplication of services, as I get ramped up on my soapbox here, is another one that galls me. I'm also, in 20 years prior to being with the ESD, had served in K-12, and I can tell you that the only thing that I share with my colleagues as far as my administrative tasks is a title. I was in Mr. Ott's place, where I was a superintendent, principal, transportation director, special ed director, on and on and on, first aid, whatever. There is nothing that I do in my current job description that is duplicative of what George Russell or Nancy Golden or anybody else does. The staff that we employ are not duplicating a single service. We work very hard to make sure, in fact, that we're not duplicating that. When we say special ed, we're serving special ed students that are not served in those districts because those districts absolutely do not have nor do not want to grow the capacity to serve them. We're talking about people that are the highest needs. So that grates on me. The last time speaking of students and saying those people that say we're trying to be efficient and get money into the classroom, I've got $12 million that's going into classrooms that if you haven't been in a life skills classroom, you need to get there so that you understand the difference between a life skills classroom and any other classroom that you've ever been in. Those are classrooms that are absolutely life-saving, where students have full-time nurses, where students have medication and feeding and all of those other attributes, then literally they would not exist if those services didn't be provided through the ESDs. So if you can read into that, I'm getting too out there on the end. So I don't know where I am compared to Steve.
You're a superintendent.
Time out for me, unless you have any questions.
I do have one, Mr. Hitchcock. You're on the criteria committee of this report, and this report suggests consolidating ESDs.
That does.
But your conversation and testimony here today seems very adamant in opposition to that.
That suggests that there could be efficiencies to be gained through consolidation of ESDs. You're correct, Chair Walker. But what it doesn't say, and what I hope I gave, is probably I wouldn't, nowhere there does it say we would like to be consolidated by ODE or by the state legislator or by any other thing. I would like to think that that organization that is not broken, given the task of reorganizing. I'd rather call it, rather than merging or consolidation, if we were given the task of organizing ourselves, then that larger group would get back in the room, and what would be the outcome of that would be a system of regional service delivery that may include something like 15 ESDs, but didn't lose the services. And so when we mandate that we're going to do it by somebody else, I'm worried about the smallest and the most remote districts, and I'm also worried about the Eugenes and the Springfields that are saying, whoa, you can give me that money, I don't have the space, I don't have the capacity. So that's, I guess, too long, but that's the distinction between merger and reorganization, and the people that are doing that merger, I think, that have the best chance to come up with something productive are not, you know, a disgruntled senator or a disgruntled board member from a single ESD.
Well, I'm looking at the testimony, the notes that I took from the testimony on Monday, And Mr. Rose, in answer to a question by Senator Deckert, said we could. He said, Senator Deckert said, how could a committee with a stake in the outcome be able to drive the hard decisions? And Mr. Rose said that we could probably do 12 to 15 ESDs. So even Mr. Rose is indicating.
Right, but Mr. Rose, excuse me, Chair, Mr. Rose was saying we, I think, referring to OAESD. Mm-hmm. And also from that Monday testimony mm-hmm. when Senator Morissette said, I believe that the people that are giving us the testimony are the experts. That's who, when I say I believe there are experts, I believe those experts are the people that are closest to the issue, and I think they're the ones that, given the time to forward that, could do a more productive job than have it be something that's driven from top down. I hope I'm addressing the question.
You are. And Senator Morissette's question right after that was, these are the experts who understand the services. So I'm glad I have my notes. But thank you for your testimony. Does anyone else have a question? Senator Cruz.
I'm getting a sense, and you can correct me if I'm wrong or just remain silent, that the genesis of this was, if we don't do it, they're going to do it to us. And if that's the case, maybe, I mean, if we follow that logically, we're saying, okay, people are saying we have to do something, whether it's really what we want to do or what should happen, we would rather... This would be less onerous than what somebody else is going to do to us. Would that be a fair statement?
That would be a direct quote. The first words I've
ever Absolutely. Thank you very much.
And on that note, I think that says it all. Very good, Senator Cruz. All right, gentlemen, thank you for your testimony today.
Thank you very much.
All right. We're now at 5 to 12, so let's bring up three more folks. Bill Gehling, I hope I pronounced that correct, from Powers. Sue Ellis and, oh my, Sybilla Cook. I hope I got that correctly. Oh, good.
Got my name right.
Oh, good.
I'll be careful.
And that's only two of the three that I called, so... Sue, are you Sybilla then?
I'm Sybilla.
Okay, then Sue Ellis must not be here. Then let's bring up, pardon? Did someone say anything? Okay, then there's one other fellow, Jagan Kent?
Jagan Call.
Oh, Jagan Call. There, okay. All right, so this time we'll go from right to left, just to spruce things up a little bit.
I'm Bill Gehling. I'm the superintendent of schools in Powers, Oregon. Field box 479, Powers 97466. We are a remote, rural, southwestern Oregon school district in the foothills of the Siskiyou Mountains, about 35 miles from the Rogue River, and about 55 miles from Coos Bay, 75 miles from Roseburg. So I speak from a perspective of someone who's working in a small school district of 145 kids, K-12, and what we receive in terms of ESD services and the impact, from my perspective, of a proposed merger of ESD services. From my perspective, my sense is that this argument centers around economy of scale. And my rebuttal or my rejoinder to that would be that at some point, economy of scale has to give sway to being geographically inefficient. And for me, already from a remote rural school district, and incidentally, previous to this, I was administering in Elkton, so I also experienced being in the Douglas ESD. From my perspective, I think the farther you move your ESD services away from your districts, especially districts such as mine, the more difficult it is for us to access services. It becomes very difficult for us to be able to do so. Another concern that I have is that there are between the South Coast ESD and the Douglas ESD, the emphasis in terms of resolution services is significantly different. Our resolution services are in the life skills areas with the significantly disabled students, and in mild, moderate orthopedic services. That emphasis is different here. if those ESDs were to merge, then we would have to resolve those differences. And then our districts would have to go back and say, okay, if we're going to provide these services for these kids, then how are we going to do that? And for me, that becomes a significant problem. Very difficult to do. Marv was up a little bit earlier and talked about his responsibilities, and I sat here with a grin and said, that's a piece of cake. I'm in the process of retiring, and in that process, I listed what I thought were the important duties of my particular administrative position. I came up with 18, and that included the possibility of teaching, and up until 2 years ago, I coached basketball as well. I did that for 31 years. And so I've had a chance to do a number of other things. If I didn't have support of the ESD, because of the number of services or the number of things that I have to do within our office, then my ability to provide administrative service to this district would be very difficult. And I'm just going to very quickly go through some of the things that I depend upon the ESD for. They are our internet provider, and they provide technological support for our district. And we're talking about video streaming right now. Senator Starr talked about that, which is an opportunity for online services and that we're looking at, where our kids can access the online learning and our staff more significantly. Our ESD is going to have to help us with that significantly if we're going to go to that technology. Financial services and becoming a financial consultant, especially important now with the database initiative in the state of Oregon. Our fiscal officer who keeps me out of jail has to have that consultant service. Consultation and evaluation of our students. I don't have access to a psychologist or someone of that nature. And the ESD provides those services for speech therapy, audiology for kids who have those issues, curriculum issues, including the management of some of the grants, including the Perkins grant, for example, which is in the area of vocational technical education, life skills, as I talked about, Medicaid administrative services for kids who that applies to. Attendance services, they provide a little bit of backbone, help us a little bit more for dealing with people who have attendance issues. Addressing the issues around homeschool and ensuring that those parents are doing what they're supposed to be doing that way. And that administrative support as well, for especially someone who's a new administrator, and coordinating our administrators. This year I happen to sit as the chair of the South Coast Administrators, and I can tell you that the coordination of those administrators is very important, the opportunity to get together. If we're now located in Douglas County, that becomes much more difficult for us to accomplish. So with that, I'll step away and let Billy, whom I've known for some time, go ahead and express her views.
All right, thank you.
Well, I'm Sybilla Cook, and I'm retired, and I'm here just as a citizen. And I used to be a school library media specialist, which was the official title. The kids called me a library teacher, which I think is a much more appropriate title in some of the rural schools here in Douglas County. I worked for Glide, I worked for Winston-Dillard, and then after I retired, I consulted with Elkton, Ash Valley, and Umpqua school districts. I came out here almost 30 years ago from the North Shore of Chicago, and I was teaching in a rather large district in Des Plaines, Illinois, and the contrast with Winston-Dillard was, dramatic is a good word. But I was telling Bill that one of the things that I noticed when I came out here was that I had been in a district which had provided everything. We provided the technology, which in those days was film strips and videotapes and movies. We provided the speech services. We had 19 languages, I think, being taught in Des Plaines when I came, and the people who came to help with the kids who came from the Philippines or from Greece or from Syria came through the library. If you're in the library, you know pretty much everything that's going on because that's the place that everybody meets. So we had all these things that we had to provide ourselves. When I came here and discovered the IED, it was amazing to me, because even in a rural district such as Dillard School, we had access to a far greater library of films and so on than we had been able to provide our kids in Des Plaines. And the same went for all these different services. And the rural kids need more of that, because in Des Plaines, I could take the kids down to the Field Museum for a morning field trip. I can't do that in this district or in this area. You just can't get the kids to a museum in a day. And you certainly can't get them to anything such as the Lane Planetarium, for example. So I feel the ESDs are immensely important in the rural areas. And I think one of the things that I noticed a letter in the paper years ago from somebody, and he said at one point the school districts tried to provide quality education, and it had switched over to providing cheap education. Now, there's a big difference in attitude, and it seems to me these consolidations are, as someone said, are more interesting in saving dollars than in providing services to kids. And I'm as cheap as they come, believe me. But I do think there are some important things where you spend your money. If there are problems with other ESDs, then I think Douglas County is a model.
Sounds like it.
And I think Douglas County ESD might be used as a model for other districts to pattern themselves on. And I think the cooperation among districts is great, and the cooperation among ESDs is terrific and should be facilitated. I don't think a mandatory consolidation is the way to go. The other things that we got out of the ESD was economy of purchasing. In a small district, if you buy a piece of equipment, they get you. You get paid full price. But if all the districts are merging, the ESD was able to negotiate some wonderful prices on computers when they came in. The paper that we used was a mass purchase by the ESD, and then they would send out pallets of paper to the districts. That's a really, you know, there's a lot of savings that I don't think people are taking in. I don't think consolidation necessarily saves dollars, as somebody pointed out. It just moves the dollars further away from the people. And I just feel that even though I've retired, I still am passionately interested in the students here. Oh, one more thing. When you look at things geographically, you look at a map. But things work on roads. Down here, we have one east-west road, and we have one north-south road. And if you want to get from anywhere to anywhere else, you have to make a lot of side trips to get to one of those two roads. That's all we've got in the southern part of the state.
In fact, I think there's only one road in and out of Powers. Isn't that true?
Mm-hmm. And I would enjoy having you come down and take that road.
There's a beautiful
there's
trail.
Another way.
But I think all of you already know that because you're all from the rural area. I was really glad to see that almost all of you know this area well. But it is something very easy to forget if you live in a more populous area where you have maybe eight roads instead of two.
You know, when one section of my highway is closed, I know the other way. But when you live on the coast and in the rural areas, well, we know the back roads, but still. All right, well, thank you, Ms.
Madam Chair.
Yes,
There was an interesting question raised. On my Ways and Means Subcommittee in Revenue, they talked about state purchasing, and I said, does that... And they said they do it for all public bodies, and I said, are you talking about fire districts and so on and so forth? And they said, yes. Do ESDs go through the state to do the purchasing?
Yes, these purchase for the county was working there. Am I right?
Is there any connection between the state purchasing and ESD purchasing is my question.
I'm not an expert.
I'm not sure.
Okay, I need to take another look at that.
Mr. Hill would know.
Okay, good. Thank you.
All right, great. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Gould.
Madam Chair and Senators, I'm here under very strange circumstances. I thought we were signing for being present here.
And but, can you state your name, please?
My name is Jagan Cole. I live in Roseburg. I'm one of the newest residents here. I moved from the Midwest. And
you have a Midwest accent. So.
Thank you. And my son is a chiropractic physician here, and we have two grandkids, and that was the motivation for me to move to your beautiful city. And now that we are here, and as I have been in the past, very much involved in public life, when I came to know that this Senate committee was coming to Roseburg, I was thrilled, because I do believe in philosophy like this, where government stays very close to their constituents, to their people. And that makes it more efficient, that makes it more representative. Anyway, as I said, I came here, I signed, I thought I was one of the persons there joining the rest of the crowd, but I ended up here being a witness. And I'm glad I have this opportunity. Thank you very much for inviting me. I, as you can see, am a person who has moved to the United States about 50 years ago from a third world country. And we Americans call them with proud third world, the underlying assumption being we are first world. As a matter of fact, we Americans are first of the first world. Now, one of the peculiarities of this thing is that in that third world country, I was one of the students who, from first grade to PhD, did not have to pay a penny by way of tuition. We cannot expect that to happen in a third world country, can we? Hey, we are the richest people in the world, yet they are providing free education, and we, you know, the rest of the story. Well, what I'm saying here basically to you, ladies and gentlemen, is it's the question of will. It's the question of leadership. I did, yet after having first PhD from the place I was born in, Kashmir, I went to India and had a medical degree from University of Calcutta and became an MD. Thereafter, as the luck would have it, I met an American lady in Japan, and we traveled from Japan to Nepal together, and finally we decided, hey, we were very compatible, why not to seal this relationship? So we married, and I landed in the United States. Now, after I landed in the United States, the question was, what do I do here? You see, because if I wanted to pursue my medical practice, I had to go back in order to get my residency, get my requirements made, and then that would have taken 3-4 years. I decided, all right, I have traveled in the literary area. I have a PhD in Urdu, a language. I have an MD in medicine, so why not to try law? And my wife, as naive as she was, she said, this is America, you can do anything you want. I said, all right, that's a good idea, let's go and do it. So I went back to school, I got a BA from Augustana College, South Dakota, I got a master's degree from University of South Dakota, I got a PhD degree in international law from University of Nebraska, and simultaneously I was teaching in these institutions. And I realized then what it means to be a student in the United States of America. My suggestion here, my friends, is after having traveled through the education channels and also having taught in University of Nebraska and also in Mankato State University in Minnesota, South Dakota School of Mines and Technology in the Black Hills, and University of South Dakota at Sioux Falls, South Dakota, after having done this kind of background in the education arena, I have to tell you, we have to wisen up. We have to rise. The national leadership of our country is not paying as much attention to the educational arena as we should be paying. You see, as an Indian, I am very happy that we have so many doctors and so many engineers and so many scientists and so many professors from India. And as an American, I ask, what the hell is wrong with our own kids? Why am I saying so? Because these are the best paying jobs. These are the very important jobs, yet we are sleeping, we are doing nothing about meeting these needs of our own society. My goodness, are we doomed? What are we doing? I mean, these are the important areas. And the reason, as I see it, I think national leadership is not cognizant of what is happening, and the state and local leaderships are not pressing them. In my opinion, as an American citizen, I tell you, the Department of Education, the arena of education, is far more important than the Department of Defense, than the Department of National Security, because this is where you are creating American citizens. And if we don't make investment there, you can keep... I have had opportunity of traveling through several countries. I have lived and worked in 68 countries, in Asia, Africa, Europe, and Americas. So I have a little bit of a knowledge how people work. We have a country known as Saudi Arabia. They don't worry to send their kids to schools and colleges because they know we have petrodollars, we can go and buy it. Anything we need, engineers, professors, lawyers, whatever you need, you can go and buy it. So they use their money in buying helicopters, in buying aeroplanes, going to Europe every week and getting new perfumes from there and all that kind of stuff. But we are Americans. And as the luck would have it, we have been given an opportunity of providing leadership to the rest of the world now. It is our responsibility to create American people who are knowledgeable, who are skillful, who are trained, who know the meaning of diversity. We don't want to be remembered like the English, like the French, like the Spanish. We want to be known as people who gave a new beginning to the rest of the world. And we need personnel for that. You can hire people from elsewhere. But when you want America to become the leader of transforming the rest of the world, my friends, we have a huge task on our shoulders, and this task we must take very seriously. And the beginning of that task is education, education, education. And you are our local leaders. You are our local leaders. Help us to convey this message. Take this message from here to Washington. They have money. I'll give you an example.
Dr. Call.
Yes, ma'am.
I love your testimony today. It's a little off of Senate Bill 415.
I know.
You're very inspiring. I'm going to give you one more minute to
okay.
tell us what you want to tell us, and then I'm sorry, but I have to move on.
No problem at all. I understand it. I did not repeat all those aspects of the discussion because they were already tackled, and I thought I'll give you something else to think about.
Okay.
Very good.
And you have 1 minute to do it.
All right.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman, Senators, I know we have money, we have resources, we have funds. As I was saying, I'll give you an example. We give $100 million a month to a country that we call our allies, collaborators, friends. And this is the same country that gave birth to all of the Islamic terrorism that exists in the world. And this is the same country that hosts Osama bin Laden. This is the same country that developed an Islamic terrorist university. I'm talking of Pakistan. Well, I'm not against anybody. I'm not against giving aid to the needy people. But if we can waste $100 million a month in a country which we know for sure what they have done, can't we invest that kind of money in Oregon? Can't we invest that kind of money in Roseburg? Can't we invest that kind of money in our own children? My suggestion is, please hold the feet of the national leaders to the fire and tell them our first and foremost responsibility is to the citizens of this country, to the children of this country, if you want America to be a strong country. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. We really appreciate your testimony, even though it was a little far afield from Senate Bill 14, but only, I mean, you care about education and you care about kids, and I appreciate that, and I think we very much appreciate the view that you have come here from another country, become an American citizen, and you care so much about our country because it's now your country, and I appreciate
Thank you so very much. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'd be interested in seeing what he could do if he was prepared to speak.
All right. Thank you both. You were wonderful. Okay. We've got about 20 minutes because we do have to break down at a certain point in time. There's a Brookings panel here, Jim Bassett and Valerie Sharpton. And then I've got some Douglas people that will clean up with the Douglas County people. Great. Batting cleanup. Okay. So, Jim and Valerie, state your names and who you're with, please.
Can I go first?
You go first.
I'm Jim Baggett. I'm the technology coordinator at Brookings Harbor School District 17C. Been there for 27 years. I'm 17 as a teacher. 10 years as the technology coordinator. Our district is located at 564 Fern Avenue in Brookings, Oregon. I wanted an opportunity to talk about these proposals for restructuring the ESDs. Curry has already been swallowed once. Now, instead of driving to Gold Beach, we drive to Coos Bay for opportunities to meet with colleagues, get information, that sort of thing. I'm not sure who we might end up with if the proposals are followed, but
sort of like an arranged marriage.
Yeah. however we do it, it's going to affect what we do with technology on the South Coast, and I wanted an opportunity to address that. I think it will harm the students and staffs of our school districts in that are served by the South Coast ESD. About 10 years ago, we heard about this thing called the Internet. There was no on-ramp in Southern Oregon, on the coast anyway. South Coast ESD acted as the catalyst to get us together, and we formed a consortium called SCAN, South Coast Area Network. We brought internet service providing to the South Coast. One of our business partners split off and was the actual first entity to offer internet service providing to the communities, but we actually went into business selling internet service to supplement our habit, so we were selling to the public until E-Rate came along and said that you can't do that. In that 10 years since then, we've developed quite an array of technology services that are a direct result of South Coast ESD. From DNS services, the circuits from all our school districts go to the South Coast ESD. They act as a hub, and then they connect us to open via the ORCA NOAANet fiber. They provide firewall services to protect us. We have a consortium that buys best internet filtering that's required by the Children's Internet Protection Act and E-Rate regulations. They host email virus scanning and a spam filter to protect us from unwanted email. They're providing are acting as a video hub for the VTEL in the South Coast region. We're entering into a four-year agreement with United Streaming to provide 4,000 full video titles and 40,000 video content clips for video streaming over the internet. They provide us network support. We have a financial consortium that provides the financial software that most of our districts use to do their payrolls, accounts payable, and all that sort of thing, and miscellaneous other tasks. If we are swallowed, we can move these things. We can pay Verizon to re-engineer the data circuits and bring those over to, say, Roseburg or directly to Eugene and things like that. My sense from seeing the other merger, though, is that it's going to be expensive to do that. The infrastructure is in place. We'll probably keep that place open. In the long run, we're looking at replacing a superintendent's title with a vice superintendent's title, maybe if we were to merge with Douglas ESD. I just don't see the financial savings in that. If we look at the recommendations from the Oregon Association of Education Service Districts and look at their criteria for how to merge these districts, I would argue that the South Coast ESD should be considered more like those places on the east side of the mountain. They talk in their first criteria about topography being important and transportation. In Brookings, I think we stand to suffer just about as much as anyone would. We've got two basic opportunities to get over here. 199, if any of you are familiar with that. It's a very beautiful drive.
Yes.
When the rocks aren't in the road. This morning it was just a little bit icy, but we made it through, and it was only about 3 hours to get over here. Quite often, that road's closed. Yesterday it was closed because of a wreck. Then we would have had to drive up to Coquille and come across 42, and that is just slightly longer but quite a bit more in time, probably closer to a four-hour trip for us. And that would serve to just sever those professional ties that we have an opportunity with the current ESD. Getting together with your colleagues and finding out what they're doing is a tremendous service that the current ESD provides for us. It would just not be as feasible if we were to merge. So I would like you to consider that not everything west of the Cascades is like it is in the valley. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Valerie Shepton, the business manager for Brookings Harbor School District, 564 Fern Avenue. I'll read the little statement I have, and hopefully I won't goober it up too much, because they do hide me in the back of the building for a reason. I'll bean counter. They're supposed to be back there and not talk to you. The consolidation of South Coast The South Coast Education District with another education district would be a financial catastrophic effect for Brookings Harbor. During the past several years, while the Oregon education system has been experiencing severe financial issues, Brookings Harbor has responsibly managed its budget by delaying the heavy cutting back of programs and also not spending the additional fundings that came from Measure 30 last year. But when it failed in the 03-04 school year. In order to balance the 04-05 budget, we're spending our carryover down to 5%, which is less than $600,000, by a total of $1.2 million. This causes our 05-06 budget to be an immediate $625,000 shortfall if we get the revenues that the state's forecasting already earlier this year. If we don't get that funding, we'll be $1.2 million shortfall. The shortfall is already calculated before the PERS increases factor in, which could be as much as $400,000, or any of the other rising costs such as heating or fuel. Now our shortfall is rapidly climbing from the minimum of $1 million. If South Coast is consolidated, we'd have further higher economic issues because the resolution services is operated through South Coast is for the life skills and orthopedic programs. Both of these programs during the 03-04 school year contributed $618,000 to our maintenance of effort program. This, as you know, is federally mandated to be maintained at or higher than the previous year. Additionally, these programs are distributed on a student membership basis rather than usage as other education districts apply. Yes, I realize this consolidation would not occur for another year, maybe two, but this district cannot afford these types of cutbacks and maintain any type of quality education for our general student population. Additionally, Brookings is a member of the financial consortium within South Coast. While we may be able to continue using this financial program, which we consider called OSAS, which is the Oregon School Accounting Software, I have concerns with availability of services from another district. Currently, I can draw from South Coast assistance for processing on a short-term or long-term my payroll, accounts payable, budgeting, or general ledger. Case in point, Port Orford. Due to their size and budget constraint, they rely solely on South Coast to process all their financial needs, as they do not have any financial personnel. With South Coast being only 2 hours away, and only 2 hours away, I can have them easily come down to Brookings to help me, or I can go to Coos Bay. We already have to travel further than any other district within our boundaries. Consolidating would only increase our cost even further by increasing both our travel time and our expenses. Brookings is already isolated on the southernmost point of the Oregon coast. Merging South Coast would only further isolate Brookings and all of Curry County education community. I do have what I wrote up, but as a backup, I included what our past years, the three-year history of our general fund, what our estimates is from the state for the this fund coming year, along with for the last four-year history of our maintenance effort with South Coast ESD.
Thank you, Ms. Shafton. I'm wondering if I could impose on Dr. Hill to copy that so we can have copies.
Well, we've got copies.
Oh, you have copies. Well, there you go. He was ready to jump to the occasion.
I think I
Senator Cruz has a question.
No, just a statement. I point out you're talking about the IT interconnect. Connecting Verizon in Douglas County, for example. Verizon's not in Douglas County.
Oops.
So it might be more complicated than originally thought.
All right. Thank you. Do any of the committee have questions? All right. Thank you both very much. Appreciate your testimony. And we started out our day with Douglas County. We're going to end with Douglas County and Winston Dillard School District. So Gail Bowser, Steve Smith, and Mike Schofield.
There are two people spoken.
If you are in the room, could you come forward? And we've got 10 minutes.
Steve Smith.
I said, did I say Mike Smith?
Yes.
Oh, Steve Smith and Mike Schofield.
Senator Walker, Steve Smith had to leave for a meeting in Eugene, so he has provided me with written testimony for the committee.
Okay. I'm sorry he didn't tell us that. We could have moved him up on the agenda. Well, you've got 10 minutes, and then we have to end because we're under time constraints. So thank you very much. State your name for us, please, and who you represent.
My name is Gail Bowser. I am an employee of Douglas Education Service District, 1871 Northeast Stevens in Roseburg, Oregon. We've heard all kinds of articulate testimony today, and I want to thank the committee for coming to Roseburg. It's a real treat to have you here where we live and work every day. I wanted to offer just one other perspective as you examine this issue of ESD consolidation. And Steve would have echoed, I think, my comments if he had been able to stay for the testimony. Both Steve and I work in programs that are contracts from the State Department of Education. They happen to be special education programs, but there are numerous programs around the state like ours. They address the regional advantage of ESDs in a little bit different way. So Steve is the early intervention coordinator for the Southern Oregon region, which is a larger region than Douglas ESD's one county region, and serves also the counties in that are served by Southern Oregon ESD and Lake County in addition. So it's a different regional structure. It has been an efficient structure over time, and it has taken into account the kinds of services that need to be provided in an even larger area, or a bigger perspective kind of service. There are other examples of programs like this, like the regional programs for kids with severe multiple disabilities or autism, vision impairments, and hearing impairments. And Steve Boyarsky talked some about those programs. One of the things that we would like to encourage you to take a look at as you look at this issue of ESD reorganization or consolidation or not consolidation is that there are numbers of other regionalized kinds of systems in the state, and each of those systems has a different administrative structure, a different geographic region. The early intervention regions are different than the regional programs regions, are different than the state assessment regions. There are lots of different regionalized kinds of systems in the state, and if there is any way to consolidate those or to make them even geographically similar, I think there could be some cost savings and some administrative savings that we haven't really discussed today. So I think I'd like to encourage you to at least take a look at that issue as you talk about the appropriate number of ESDs. And I think some of that information is in the 1993 study that you received earlier today, because that was addressed. The other thing I wanted to say about ESDs is more about the programs that I am coordinator for, and those are programs that are contracted by the State Department of Education, and they are statewide programs. So that's another function that some ESDs in the state can offer as sort of the interface between what we know is best practice as provided to us from universities and the higher education system, what we know are the laws and the statutory requirements from No Child Left Behind, from the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, from the state assessment system. What our programs, which provide statewide services in terms of training and technical assistance for professionals, can do is to offer that interface between all those higher-up agencies and the local school districts. It's a function of ESDs that hasn't been discussed today, and again, I'd like to encourage you to take those kinds of activities into consideration as you look at the functions of ESD and the futures of ESDs in the state. So I think that's about all I have to say.
All right, thank you, Ms. Bowser. Appreciate it.
My name is, Madam Chair, Senators and Representatives. My name is Mike Schofield. I'm a CPA by trade. I am also a licensed municipal auditor in the state of Oregon. I was auditing school districts in this county when my career, early in my career, was invited to come to Douglas ESD as a business manager. Served here for 9 years, was invited to go to Clackamas ESD and served there for 8 years, retiring March 1st. I've seen a lot over those years, and we have seen similar discussions as we are hearing today. And I just want to offer an objective view, since I'm no longer working with ESDs, but I am now working for Winston-Dillard School District. in an attempt to make a difference for kids. I'm their business manager, and I recognize, as you do, I'm sure, the diversity in all of the schools in the state of Oregon, and we also have that diversity in the ESDs. Some of it's geographical, some of it is socioeconomic, and other factors that enter in, as was mentioned, even the roadways. It's a tough job, I know, to bring together laws and a direction in the field of education on a statewide basis. The ESDs do that on a regional basis, so they somewhat understand what you're doing. I thought the earlier discussion about the operations of ESDs was pretty much presented, but I would like to just take a moment, and forgive me for reading this, but I would like to go back to ORS 334.125. And I'm referring to this because I worked under the direction of Vern Bittner as a superintendent here, who was a firm believer in resolution services and listening to the needs of the superintendents. I also followed behind David Campbell in Clackamas ESD, where the same philosophy was not only spoken, but exercised. This, I believe, is the key, because the magic of the ESDs is the cooperative effort that we can offer to districts, and it's very plainly put in the statute. This is 335.125, paragraph 9A. The education service district shall work cooperatively with component school districts and review periodically with component school districts the operations of component school districts, and shall submit to the component school district plans for operations that achieve economies and efficiencies through consolidation of various education service district of various operations of all or some of the districts. The education service district and its component districts shall submit an annual report of the effectiveness of the consolidation of the operations to the State Board of Ed. Now, I've worked under superintendents that, through great deliberation with county school superintendents, will bring together those areas of service that the ESD can offer to the local districts, and I've seen it effectively done. It becomes extremely difficult in a period of scarce resources, which we have watched for the past few sessions. And at the same time, I have watched a superintendent that has stayed the course, brought the superintendents back until they resolved the issues, decided what the program's going to be, and then went forward. And while we're talking about the superintendent's involvement, there was the suggestion of Superintendent Rossler that the superintendents be on the budget committee. And I think that is very wise, because if they have gone through hashing out what the services are going to be, then it's a natural for them to be part of the budget committee of that ESD. That also answers the question of the 90%, because now they're not only dealing with 90% of the budget, they are participating in decisions about 100% of the budget, regardless of the resources. The 90% rule applies to the school support formula, and here at the ESD and at Clackamas, we always felt that the taxpayers' money locally also was available, and other resources that we might generate. I would like for you, as you deliberate on Senate Bill 415, which I'm adamantly opposed to, I would like for you to look closely at Northwest ESD. This is an ESD that consolidated small schools, large schools, over a large geographic area. And it would be very fruitful to watch carefully what that ESD has struggled with in trying to bring the component school districts together, to reason together to create programs. There are some regional programs that still work very well for them. There are others that do not. And the magic of the ESD is to don't push those efforts that we can't do cooperatively, but keep the focus on the cooperative efforts. Primarily that's technology, it's curriculum, and it's special ed. And it always has been, and that's where the magic of the ESD is. In closing, which I know is what you're after, I think that we have a difficult time in the state of Oregon. We work in small schools or large schools, and our focus is the schools. We heard earlier the responsibility of the board is that school. And at the same time, the ESD then comes in with a little larger umbrella and tries to coordinate some cooperative services. And then, bless your heart, you have to, as a state, come in and take a look at the global perspective for the state of Oregon. So you understand well what it means to collaborate and to cooperate with the educational community. I just want to remind you that I, too, am aware of some bad behavior in state regarding ESDs, and I, too, at the time I was working at Clackamas ESD before my retirement in March, and I, with the rest of the ESD family, suffered the embarrassment of some choices that were very bad on the part of primarily two ESDs. I just want to remind you that the steps in correcting bad behavior in the classroom is we keep someone afterwards after detention, and if we're not successful, ultimately suspension or dismissal is required. But we don't keep the whole class after school to pay the penalty for bad behavior of a few. And I would strongly urge you to look closely at the decision, because I think the components of cooperative work by ESD is already incorporated in the law, and it's a matter of exercising and implementing the laws that are already given rather than creating new ones. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schofield and Ms. Bowser. Great ending to a wonderful day. I really want to thank all of you who came today. It has been an incredible experience for us as legislators to get out of the building and out here where the real people live and work. And it is hard for us to do that. It's a tremendous amount of work on the part of the staff, and there is some expense involved, but we do think it's worth it. And I think all of us today sense one thing very clearly, that you all care about the kids, and that's really the bottom line. So thank you very much for all your poignant testimony. And I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 415. Colleagues, just to let you know, if you ordered a lunch, you owe Marjorie Taylor, and I'm putting it on the record so we can get to you. You owe her $6.46. It's a very strange number. But you'll get your lunches, and we'll be ready to go, Marjorie, when?
By the time we pack up the van.
Okay,
so
great. And so we'll move to the back of the room and converse and grab our lunches, and I will adjourn our hearing. Thank you.